You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to audiochat.fakeologist.com. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists around the globe. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. To listen to the live stream, go to s3.fakeologist.com. Now, on with the audio chat.
I'm not verified in this.
You say it, Bill?
Don't say it on the live stream, though. I'm just Phil.
Oh, okay. Right, well, we're in the live stream now, so this is, what's the date today? 13th of the 1st. It's my mate Charlie's birthday. Happy birthday, Charlie. 13th of the 1st, 2019. Got me and... So what am I calling you?
Phil.
Okay.
Phil.
Yeah, that's fine.
Phil Harmonic. Or Phil Blanks on here, yeah.
Phil Blanks, you might as well. That's the one you've killed with in the past. Might as well stick with that name. But yeah, me, Matty, and Phil are here, so say hello, Matty.
Hello, Matty. Won't be a very long one. Help me get started. Come on. I've got to go off and learn some songs.
We'll start some. Phil was talking about the initiation, and he was also talking about the initiation on September the 11th as well, that we were all we were all put under the spell if we were stood in front of a TV that day. But go on, Phil. You were chatting about the initiation. I've not seen the film, so what is this?
It's from the synchromistic Jordan Barkey.
Say that again. I'm sure Matty knows that.
Jordan Barkey?
No, I don't know. I don't know that one.
I honestly don't even remember what we were talking about. Why I was bringing this up. So, can you set this up? How we were talking about initiation with 9/11, but we were talking about executive decision.
We were talking about how easy it is to change your mind on something and look at something another way. Just as growing up, like to do with the film Star Wars, I always seen Star Wars as a real bitter pill to swallow straight away. And the only time, you know, because of the baddies and the goodies and such, the differing points. That the only time I seen that again was when I was actually coming out of the spell. That is September the 11th, when you actually see that, you know, there was no terrorists, there was no planes, there was no people jumping out, and it was all manipulation of a screen in front of my face. And I said to you that it's definitely an initiation. If you were in front of the screen that day, paying attention to what we show. Also, especially if you're American, any of the films that we've grown up with, you know, This is where we're up to. You would bring in the movie The Initiation. But I said any of the films from, say, 1980 up to, you know, the late 90s were all about, up till like the mid 90s was like the Russians and Arabs, and then all of a sudden we've got terrorism at your doorstep. So while you're watching the events unfold, the September the 11th, and you're being told the different news stories, you're also playing out most of the different scenarios from the films, and you have whether that's Bruce Willis running around the tower block on fire, or you know it's Arnie in True Lies flying up a building with a plane and a rocket. You know these were all part of the initiation. It was a big trick.
The indoctrination, the capturing the imagination, the set up, the build up to the climax of the trip.
Yeah, to whatever it's called, prestige or whatever it is at the end. Mm-hmm. But yes, so that's what we're up to. And you said about the initiation film.
Yeah, but I was talking about how we had already been like through this, but then just recently was this film called Initiation. I don't remember what I was like. What my point was, we got cut off with the thought of coming in here. So.
Did you say it's from a sink? Something sink?
Yeah, so with this kind of setup, like, I don't know, though, like, how we're in this tricked environment, So with executive decision, the for the end, which I brought up in my mind. I went back and watched this.
Explain executive decision to the people listening, which will be Matty. So go on. What is executive decision?
Thank you.
So this was like straight up the embodiment of the on board. You're on board with the terrorists, the Arab terrorists, having taken over the plane, having, you know, the commandos battling them like underground. They got the CIA, you know, whatever, taking care of the situation in the base, and you got the commandos on the plane, and we're with the lead terrorist, the guy who then also did a heel face turn later to become like kind of a good guy in a Michael Douglas film as an Arab police officer, and he was also in the Bruce Willis film as a commander or whatever, a corporal to Bruce Willis. So he did a heel face turn after this film. So in here he's the heel, and he's you know, like gung ho Arab. You know, he's all about the suicide mission. He's all about killing. And so have a bomb on board, and they're trying to get close enough to Washington to blow up the plane with the big, basically a nuke. And they're flying this from Europe to America. They got the Americans having boarded, and they're going to try to stop them. And these guys are defusing the bomb, and the Terminator 2 black guy, what's his name? He's a cool guy. I like this actor. Anyway, he's the one who's Cappy is his name in the film. He's trying to guide this techie guy through the process of defusing the bomb, and they didn't do it right. So they're like going through this process of like discovery at this moment, this like this really tense moment where the bomb is in their mind about to blow up. They think that like it's about to that they've completely fucked it. So the thing though that happens is that it's actually a decoy bomb. So all this effort that they spent on studying this bomb and setting up their plan of attack was for naught. But the rope-a-dope, as you were talking about, or like the trick, there was a trick that the terrorists had played on them to have the real bomb as a completely different type of bomb than the one that they were working with. So, all right, so to really like lay it out what I was thinking at the time when I pulled up this scene was that I had just watched this initiation video from Jordan Barkey, and I was thinking, wow, so that's what 9/11 was. That's he laid it out in symbols, and it's the biggest mind fuck if you're prepared enough to watch this beyond just like the information that it offers. It's a total fucking, like, when I was like watching this, I was like, my God, the effort that had gone into this, this is coming from a link, like two kind of steps away, two links back from the Back to the Future Predicts 9/11. If you go from Apophenia Productions, the producer, the maker of the Back to the Future Predicts 9/11, and then you see that he's got a Christopher, who's the Back to the Future guy, Christopher Lloyd, is supposedly like in these other synchronistic connections of other films. So then you watch that on Vimeo, and then you click then to Vimeo his account, and you see this initiation film. This is what I was like just a month behind after it had been published or something, and then it kind of shows what the fucking meaning of 9/11 is, of 119 or 191, 911. Like it's a very wild film, and it really hammers home a very initiatory idea. And
you're saying there was an initiative behind
right?
A leaflet campaign, is what he's saying. No, I understand. Right, well, can you encapsulate? Because remember, if there's anybody is listening here, so, well, surely Phil's going to be able to put this in a nutshell for us, at least, some little soundbite of what the initiation what the film's about at the end. You know, what light it sheds on September the 11th. What was the initiation?
So it ends with Snakes on a Plane, a reference to Snakes on a Plane, which was at the time when I saw this movie come out. I kind of had like the biggest sense there was some subtext here, because like 9/11 had just happened, and like there's no like literary sense to Snakes on a Plane. It's just like such an, like there's something odd to that idea about, okay, like I didn't watch the movie, but like I get the idea. They bring a bunch of snakes on the plane and the snakes get out of control, and then the quote from Samuel L. Jackson, we gotta stop these motherfucking snakes. Okay, fine. You know, there's something, you know, definitely entertaining that anyone who wants to watch an action film can get out of that. But what's the point? You know, like I could just tell that there was something subtextually going on with that. So the...
Well, I know, but if you've not watched the film, how do you know, man? Because they've got maybe that was just the start of when films just turn to shit.
That could be part of it. Snakes on a Plane was 2006. So the flashing initiation text on the screen of the movie of the 20-minute film was right after Indiana Jones had lowered the German chick into the tomb beneath the church that they had hammered open from the X on the bottom of the floor and into the snake pit. So like this is you in the beginning of the film recognizing at least what the initiatory process was like. We were talking about the depths of darkness going through, and like, I don't know. I mean, they kind of like show that is what this initiatory like process begins with. I guess is yeah. Please.
And yeah, no. I'm gonna jump in. And the only reason being is because you know, so you can say that now. But what about someone who was 15 waking up? Let's just say what they'll use me as a. I woke up on that day, and I was doing a couple of bits, and my mum said, "Turn the telly on." So I turned the telly on, and I seen that first smoking hole. You know, I looked at her and I thought, right, that's an insurance job, definitely. You know, no one flies a plane into a building. And that was it. Never thought about it again for about 4 years. But then when obviously, you know, the rest of that day, they went, oh, you know, this is what happened. You just take it on the chin. Now, as it happened, I was doing things. I was busy at the time. And I just thought them crazy yanks. But I didn't think, think seriously about this blowback or whatever it's called, you know, this, you know,
backlash.
Backlash, yes. Blowback, whatever you want to call it, until I looked into the conspiracies behind all these things, and obviously then it all starts falling into place like all the conspiracies does. But now we're at the stage now where we know the planes wasn't real, we know the buildings, my opinion, planes wasn't real, so no one died in the planes, buildings were empty, no one died in the buildings. You know, it was more of a celebration of the trick. So, in my eyes, nobody died on that day from anything to do with terrorism, so to speak. Okay? Right. So, knowing that now, I see the trick for what it was. And I understand all the films that led up to that. So, I can see how that trick worked on me. But to someone who didn't pay attention, it didn't really do much. But to someone who's really into the news, that backed up all the stories they've been thinking of in the past. All the, you know, the big upheaval. You know, in the Middle East, this is backlash and all this. So just when we were talking about people at universities around the world and stuff believing, you know, the media. So, you know, there are people who would have seen this now, not paid any much attention like what I did. And they're still living in the Disneyland of this terrorism. You know, there's people out there who are committed to ruining your day. It's nothing to do with you. Now, that... Once you understand that, that's not real. That literally, that means that the entire trick of that all stems from that one day. You know, you had bombings before this, that, and the other, and these were all in certain other areas, and now we look at them and we go, well, look, they're definitely drills portrayed as real. But this was different. This was done to the entire world. This wasn't a controlled audience or, you know, a controlled camera crew. This was bombed to the entire Occidental world. not to the Middle East, unless they had a flat screen TV or a monolith. But you know what I mean? This is what I mean, this initiation. You know, what is it? Because to some it's just a trick. To some it's something even more. To some like me, it's just a 33-year trick that's been foisted upon everyone in movies and TV, scripts and music videos, you know. Yeah.
Well, like, Questioning Our Reality had a good point about the spinach, you know, vegetarian. Like, he's anti-eating vegetables or something, but the selling of Popeye as like a spinach eater and the strength that he gets out of it was that psyop. But then I think that led me to think about
that comes from the myth of
Alibaba.
The tell you that spinach had more iron when it didn't.
You know? But the Alibaba episode, that they showed on TV for me as a kid. So that programming, I think, started in like the 20s or something. But I mean, they had to really set this up many more years in advance than just 33 years before. That was just when they kind of like cemented the foundation was laid that day for it. But that's when they, like, the building opened, I think, in 68, right? Or that's when they actually laid the foundation for the towers.
Yeah, around that date, 68. But yeah, that takes you to 2001. I think it takes you to July or something, 2001. Yeah, you're right. But, so is that just like Disney growing up then? Is that what you think it is? That was just the day it well went real. Was that the first major flash mob? You know, because there's people still analysing that. Someone was posting today, what's his name? The report, what's his name? The begins with a C. Corbett report. You know, he's talking about more information to do with September 11th. We know what happened or what didn't happen that day. The logistics of the story doesn't matter anymore, does it? No, you literally, what was seen on TV, there's no more information out there. That was the trick, so we might as well look at that, what was said. And it even started before it, like we were talking with the news and stuff, and on the news that day, prior to that, they was playing crashes and oil embargoes and terrorism already. You know, that's what it was. It was a trick. But surely we can take that into the real world. So why we're talking about Star Wars, you know, that was just, you see that now, we had the same trick foisted upon us when we were, you know, young, watching Star Wars. You see two total polar opposites and explain it to you straight away as if it's real. And you're just like, all right, yeah, Jesus or Darth Vader's bad and Luke Skywalker's good. And it's like, no, there is no bad and good. You know, you've got evil, whatever you want to call it, God, the devil, you've got all these different scenarios of how people want to explain things. But, you know, when they put stories in front of you, we're not intelligent enough to have a proper story, so they just give you something stupid like Star Wars or September 11th. That's what I was saying, you know, you've got a choice, haven't you?
Well, like, the levels of the tricks, was what I was talking about, where, like, to realize that the tricks that you were unraveling were themselves part of another trick. And then to have to then unravel that one, it's a mind fuck. That's pull up that TV trope, mind rape or something. No, what is it? TV tropes, mind screw. That's what it was. So mind screw is something that relies so heavily on symbolism or surrealism, absurdism, or failed so extremely in an attempt at regular old coherency that the immediate response afterwards is, what the heck was that? Everything you know is wrong. Black is white, up is down, short is long. And everything you thought was just so important doesn't matter. That's from Weird Al. So I was just like, I had already studied Clues for him stuff, but then...
You go there a lot, don't you?
I used to.
Yeah, go on. Who's your favorite writers on there? Give some plugs.
I just really focused on I didn't even watch Sir Tamara Cruise. I watched the clips, and I watched from Fakeologist's account, and I just really went through the posts on the forum and the September Cruise.info.
It's a wonderful video. It's a cracking video.
I can't watch the stuff that has like really like music that's like too manipulative, and so I just prefer like going through the HTML layouts and then watching 10-minute, 5-minute clips. Like the actors, I think, was part of the September Clues documentary, but the like just to watch that one clip from Simon's channel or Fakeologist's channel was good enough for me to really hammer the point home that the families are actors. yeah, but anyway, so what I was saying was that I had already gotten wind of that hoax after having already studied a bunch, but then I was like, okay, 9/11, done. Now, coming back to it, and then getting this initiation video, and then seeing, like, because this Back to the Future prediction 9/11 sets it up.
Yeah, one set, right? But think about this, right? If you were a hypnotist, okay? And all of a sudden you've got like about 50 people. You've taken on an extra caseload because one of your hypnotists has been hypnotizing people wrong. Okay? So now what you've got to do is you've got to deprogram them before you explain, you know, your way of thinking. Yeah. But now you can think of it the other way. Now you're trying to examine how people act when everybody's still under this trick of September the 11th. You know what I mean? People as people, you know, so it's very hard to judge how society is since that day. You know, everybody's falling into line now, either being a do-good or like I was talking about with the universities, people are so hell-bent on getting out of the country, getting a degree, getting some menial job, or if you're some testing something in a lab, and just meeting someone who can at least speak the same language, or they've got a common denominator in fucking bordering countries, and they're just make do and live in whatever country will take them, you know, as they are, as long as there's no fucking crazy persecution going on. It's mental, man, and that's not far off Star Wars. You know, it's exactly the same, and none of it, all of it's based on the trick, a lie.
Yeah, it's all tricks. It's as Chris says, that the trickery is the most.
Yeah, so it's hard to examine people. Yeah, so it's hard to examine people who are under that trick. You know, I mean, sorry, we talk about immigration and, you know, the next generation down, they're forgetting it. Yeah, of course they are. The next generation will be, you know, oblivious and just as lazy as, you know, we all were when we were teenagers. But you will have the family before that will be believing after, you know, the stories. Oh, yeah, there was Ewoks here fighting our battles and, oh, you know, terrorists, whatever. But, yeah, we play the trick in our head and then we witness it in the real world, and they're both tricks. So, you know, we're trying to look at people who are still programmed and trying to wonder why they're making decisions this way, why people are still scared, why people are... Why? First of all, why do people want to make money? Can understand, oh, yeah, I make money. All right, fine. This can't have been the driving thing for humanity. Not even in the past 50 years, otherwise they wouldn't have got anywhere. You know, and if it is all about making money, then this is getting fucking, 20 years. It already has, hasn't it? Sorry, I'm waffling. Go on, carry on.
You're good at it, though.
That's just you, mate. Me and you. See? Click.
So, all right. So, this rope-a-dope, this trick within a trick, or, I don't know, like the recursive trickery.
Inception. Call it Inception. You're trying to get out of Inception. Okay. So you're trying to get out of one dream and back into the other, so... So me and you we're still in the last stream, right? And there's some people still in the one prior to that, and there's some people in the one before that, and the one before that. So, you know, we're in the last one there. So we come to, right? So me and you, now I'd say that I'm a little bit more enlightened than you because I believe that the Earth's flat. Now, to you, that sounds stupid because you believe the Earth's a ball. You know what I mean? You still don't believe I believe that for real.
I played basketball with it the other day. How could I believe otherwise?
Exactly. So you think I'm crackers there, but nevertheless, I just know that I look into something and until someone else changes my mind, I think certain ways. But we're both still in that last dream. You know what I mean? Because we don't know what...
How do we know? How can you say?
Well, no, because the last dream is knowing what September the 11th was, for argument's sake. We'll say that. So we understand that the media controls the place. The aristocrats, the people who put... Look, you don't need to run the world with power. It's nice to have the illusion of power, but it's not run with power, is it? You know what I mean?
Aristocracy.
Yeah, that sounds nice. All right. Yeah, so there you go. So, you know, it's all about people believing a certain truth, and then that's where the people flow, you know. So me and you in the last stream.
Well, the capacity
was a trick.
Right? The capacity to further inceptions to maintain the tricks within tricks, like that's I think maybe another level is to see how this is a process.
Yeah. Or you ready? Or you can come out of the dream all on your own, and you don't have to hold hands of anyone. You don't have to bring them out of the dream. You can just know it's a trick. And then your confidence can say to someone, no, it's a trick. And then before, I know it's a trick. Don't worry. You know, there is no fear. This is why all these, the esoteric stuff is out there, because that's how they do it. Like you were talking about earlier, the left hand and right hand magic and all that weird stuff. Yeah, there's a good side and a bad side. We see that in the Star Wars films. We see, you know, the dark side and the good side. One side, you can control life force, and the other, and you can't. Neither side you can do either. So you can trick people into thinking that, and that's all of this giving you power away. What Matt was saying. So if you don't agree with any of that, and you just come wake up on the dream from yourself, then you don't need to try and deprogram people from the dream prior that you were in. Now I don't care if people really believe people died on September 11th. It's no skin off my nose. You know, if I was pushing a product, it's a lot easier for me to say, watch September Clues, called fakeology.com, you know, these type of slogans. But honestly, when it comes down to it, I don't think that the power's controlled that way anyway. You know, I believe it's by what people, you know, what the majority believe. You know, and the only way you're going to get that way of thinking across, like what we do, is just by talking rationally to people. You know.
Talking what?
Rationally to people. Oh. Explaining things.
I thought you said talking wrestling to people, which would have been a good
time. That would have been a good time, wouldn't it? Especially if you were actually broadcasting wrestling earlier. Who won, by the way?
I said the refs won.
Refs won.
It was a horrible way to end the match, because it was so hyped up. It was such a... had good potential to just see, like, two really well skilled guys, you know, like, even if it wasn't really a good match, but to see them sorted out in the end would have been nice. Just that would have, you know, wowed them in the end. And then just I wanted to see, you know, like one guy do one thing that separated him from the other. But instead, the ref said that he hit him in the face, and that was it.
No, that's a dude, aren't you?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't really, like, it's a new rule. So, I don't know how it works. I didn't follow up with it, but, it's just
let me,
so
let
new.
Let me ask you a question. A question. Did you feel tricked when you found out Father Christmas wasn't real?
I didn't grow up with that. I didn't even know who Santa was, like, or when Santa came, or for the longest time.
How do you mean? Do you believe in him now? Is that what you're saying?
I think that I would have the appreciation for acting as though I believed him. You know, I'm full on prepared.
Didn't you wonder why all your mates had presents?
Huh?
Didn't you wonder why all your mates had presents?
I had presents.
Oh, right. So you just got yours off your mum and dad?
Yeah.
Right. So why no Santa? Where was you living?
Santa didn't come to my house.
Oh, wow. So you were on the naughty list, was you? So how long were you on this naughty list? Are you Bender from Breakfast Club?
Huh?
No, from Breakfast Club. Yeah, he's
which one is that?
It's the guy who gets put on detention for months.
Okay. Yeah. The one with the long hair? The guy with the long hair?
Oh, yeah, the cool one. Yeah, you're the cool one.
Yeah.
Yeah, see?
I don't like that guy that much. I don't know. I think, like, I'm super cool.
Oh, by the way, Happy New Year. There you go.
You too, Danny. Thanks.
Yeah, never said Happy New Year to you. So come on, let's go back to this initiation and this film, because you were talking about the initiation film, and I want to know why. So go and explain that to me.
Well, we were talking about executive decision. That was like the reference that I had to point at how that moment of realizing that I'd been tricked was like seeing these actors play that kind of emotion.
You know that in Indiana Jones, when he knocks through the axe on the ground and goes through the ground with the German, goes to the ground with the German girl, it's rats, it's not snakes.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't want to pull you off. You know,
No. Was it? Really? Are you sure?
Yeah, snakes is in the first one.
Okay. But he says at the end, when they show the snakes, on the plane poster, why'd there have to be snakes? I hate snakes, in Indiana Jones' quote, in his voice. So you're still in the Indiana Jones character's mind when you're wondering, why did there have to be snakes?
I think you've got a choice, haven't you? These huge bugs in the Temple of Doom. You know, he'd used snakes in Raiders of the Lost Ark. So in that one, it had to be rats. So I don't know. But snakes, he's scared of snakes.
Oh, you're talking about the I love that scene though, with the eye of the jewel they stick on the pole and they shine it down into the map, the model, and they can see.
Wonderful. See that's myth, that's building myth. You wouldn't know anything about that. You know, in the '20s you had the mummy films in the '20s and the '30s.
Mm-hmm.
And that carried on the myth of Egypt and the mummies, and you had museums with the muses and, you know, the sarcophaguses and all these different things, and it's all myth. It's all...
So the museums, you're saying, like, I've been to, like, you know, like, you know, the sarcophagus exhibit of a museum, and, like, the Egyptian mythology is, like, deeply woven into our culture with the museum exhibit, so... Like that you're saying is part of the engineering of culture is through
a lot of the major finds were a lot of these gold things and, you know, to do with sarcophagus and stuff like that. I'd say a lot of that's made up. I don't believe
so. Okay, I bet. But these key themes, right? The gold, the mummies, is that a sarcophagus? Is a mummy basically?
Yeah, mummy. Moment, and then they...
Okay. Like the tombs. Like this is all about Tomb Raiders. Tomb Raiders that have brought this to us, into our local museum to see on exhibit. That's like we are the culture that's like taking over or something. Like
we're the carnies, the traveling shows. that's where they started. That's what all these people were. These were all these snake oil salesmen of the past, and you know, they all remember all these people that do the hustles. They have children that come up with their own hustles, that are tricks. And this was no different. You know, the people that come up with the films, you know, Deepest Darkest Africa, and you know, the Mummy, Curse of the Mummy, and the Werewolf, and all these different things. These were stories that were told prior anyway, and everything's just a repackaged deal of. The way society is run.
Aristocrats. It's a generational thing.
Yeah, but all they do is they just change it. So the next level of boffins that are going to control the world, they'll have a different paintbrush they do it with. You know, you can paint people to do what they want. You know, I mean, it's
funny, but this. Seeing it with your own eyes in front of you, like this was before the screen could reach that level of realism. But like, I mean, you know, I'm about to say like, who goes to a museum? But people still go to museums.
I used to go every day to Manchester Museum every day because I lived right next to it.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it. The Beatles, the jewels, all the necklaces. Mummies are only tiny, by the way, you know, about 5 foot. And it's, you know, it's nice if you buy into it. Walk in, there's a big solar system model. There's a T-Rex skeleton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it all makes.
Yeah, it's all the myths. The museums have a theme, a general set of themes beyond even just the core of the Egyptian ones about like the dinosaurs, and then the history of flight is a big one. The Wright brothers hoax, that being a major something about like, you know, World's Fair type, you know, technological achievement is also going to be in the museum. What would a hoaxery museum look like? Like 9/11 would obviously.
Well, it doesn't matter. It's like Sean was saying the other day. When you're pissing about with electrics and wires, eventually you get a wire that actually glows, you know, because of the current going through it. So inventing the light bulb was just an accident, you know, waiting to happen. You know, so a lot of these things that we consider, you know, electricity and, you know, different ways of, you know, sending radio waves and stuff like that, these are just like fine-tuned 200-year-old technology. That's all it is.
So they say.
You know, and all they've done is they've managed to harness that technology to a certain, you know, level of expertise, refine it, repackage it, and release it at certain times when it's been, you know, amicable for all parties. But nevertheless, you know, no one's really achieved anything, have they? Really? You know, no shoes lasted longer in the old days. Everything lasted longer in the old days. Everything's, you know, everything's, what's that phrase? It's built to, you know, fall apart. Yeah. But, you know,
here today, gone tomorrow.
No, but, you know, there's a phrase, you know,
built to last.
Lessons. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's bollocks. Look, you know,
going back to the museum, the cultural, the projects for controlling the mind of the masses to prepare for these stages in the long con.
They're trying to prove something which is impossible to prove. So they have to get people on board by say, you know, right, look at this, look at that, this this points towards this, you know, there's evidence of this. It's all frickery. Mm-hmm. And then when you look into things, there's never any proof of, you know, any of the claims, really. You know, even dinosaurs, everyone, when they talk about dinosaurs, even if you can go as far as say the bones are real, it's still only interpretation. They could be totally different shapes.
You know, even
just at that level, you know, it's funny. I mean, apart from the fact that T-Rex is a killer whale with legs, which I think is the most funniest thing going.
Put legs on a
killer whale.
Tomb Raiders. Okay, so let's look at the human roles. The Tomb Raider, the paleontologist. Who does the museum viewer get to see through the eyes when they go into the museum? So the exhibit curator, the museum curator, that's one of the guys, the actors, you know, the roles around them.
Denham Elliott played that part wonderful in Indiana Jones.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
The archetypes of a museum experience include the Tomb Raiders, paleontologists, curators. I'll just, you know, pick a museum. So Manchester Museum then, right? Manchester
Museum, you walk in off the street, it's all signs. There's no signs? All signs, there's no curators.
Yeah, but there's got to be like, if not the curator of the museum itself, they're like staff, like the museum staff, I guess.
One guy went in and just bent his ear for about 20 minutes, and I think he just hides every time he sees me now. So, you know, That's what you get when you're a psychologist and you walk into a museum with, you know, solar system model and dinosaurs all over the shop.
Okay, okay, fine. So a cosmologist or astrologer?
Cosmologist. Look, most cosmologists have never looked up. Most cosmologists have never asked themselves why the fuck the moon's shadow's tiny. You know what I mean? And they talk about a penumbra. And when you see how light actually works, you know what I mean, in supposed, you know, different atmospheres and the way it travels through space. And then, you know, you look into it and you go, no, none of you is a cosmologist. You just basically, you've trumped up people who read books again. You might as well be playing World of Warcraft. But it doesn't matter what.
Wait. So the actor, like the simulation. You're like, you're just playing along through some simulation. If you're like one of these.
But what am I doing? I'm just
heliocentrist.
But if my observations go against simulation, right?
They kick you out.
For instance, some people want people like me to explain their assumptions. Do you know what I mean? They would say, "Well, explain this," and it's like, "No, I'm not explaining something you assume." Do you know what I mean? And that's where it's down to. You've got people saying, we'll tell us about this. And it's like, no, hang on, you assume it's this. And they go, yeah. And you go, well, you're assuming that. Why do you want me to explain the opposite of what you assume? You're never going to improve. And that's what most arguments are nowadays. They will explain this. And then when you know more about that's what they're on about, and you say, well, this is what you assume. They go, oh, yeah, right. And, well, so you go, I'm not explaining that. That's what I mean. This is that waking up from that dream. You know, I shouldn't have to explain stars to you if you're an astrologer, you know. But when you go looking into everything and the way they measure everything and who discovered everything, you know, and how it all falls into place under every different model going and discrepancies all up and down the line until you make observations with your own eyes from the fucking ground and then you realise they're all full of shit. What's the point in looking into it? It's crap. What's the point in looking into every 9/11 documentary?
Okay. So here's the... Manchester Museum's What's On exhibitions, current exhibitions, and then a page called Heritage Futures. I don't know what that means, but here we go. I want to read this. How can we create the future together? Combining latest academic research with incredible objects, the exhibition looks at heritage as the building blocks of the future through four themes. Profusion explores what we should pass on to future generations in an age of mass production and consumption. Diversity reflects on how diversity in nature and in cultural traditions can help people and nature cope with future uncertainty. Transformation looks at heritage, one word, as something that is not fixed, but that changes over time. Transformation of the past. Uncertainty considers what should be passed on.
Can they just say that Manchester University is run by the idiots?
I can tell. Well, I mean, they have young guys working on a copy or just a small team or something. So uncertainty...
No, I don't think anybody proofreads. The people that proofread actually end up doing other jobs.
Because that's just like not a Mancunian... a skill that you guys just...
No, I think what it is that there's this new way of speaking,
huh?
Which I'm not versed in, and it doesn't make sense to me. And I read it all over the place, and that what you just read there is pretty much the same. And it's like this next level. I don't understand it.
All right, so here we go with the fourth theme. Uncertainty considers what should we pass on to future generations when we can't be sure what they will want or need. We can't be certain what the future with a something, I don't know what that is, will be like, but through heritage futures in caps, we can at least try to ensure that the decisions we make today help provide people with the things that they might need and want in the future. In our heritage future studio, yeah?
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, say, none of that made sense.
I mean, I get the sense that they're you know, casting a spell here about, like, you know, look around, you know, look back, look forward, look side to side, and we'll guide you now forward as we put you through these exhibits, and you'll be reoriented toward
About on the other side of that poster, about on the other side of that poster, it says, "In this ever-changing city, we are flexible, blah blah blah." But, you know, we're constantly changing to take on things. So it's just like, you know, one way we're saying, "What can we leave for the future?" And then they didn't even say what we can leave for the future. So, what can we pass on to the future? It's like, you can net, you know, you can leave.
They don't even want. They don't want you to even have any self-assurance about, like, well, no, what you no, would no, be no, forward.
No, but considering most stuff starts off really good and then degrades, anything we're going to leave for future people is obviously going to degrade. So you need to do something that's really, really outspoken, you know, in order for it to be passed on to any future generation.
Yeah.
Difference wouldn't work anyway. So, see, none of this does work. Find the astrophysics department. See what they're saying, because they're
hold on. I want to see what this. It says in our Heritage Futures studio, we are asking people to help us imagine, design, and begin to create the future together. Alongside the exhibition, artist Shelley Castle from Encounter Arts.
Still listening.
Is the human Bower? What does Bower mean? Refer to a folly built by a bower bird to attract a mate. Okay, so alongside the exhibition, artist Shelley Castle from Encounter Arts is creating an installation, The Human Bower. Maybe it's like someone who bows? Taking inspiration from the extraordinary craft work of the bower bird, okay? These amazing birds gather, display, and exhibit the things they appear to hold of high value outside their twig constructions. Okay. The work will encourage conversations around what we hope the future would look like, what we could hold on to make that happen, and what we would need to let go. The exhibition is inspired by work being undertaken by the Heritage Futures Research Program, funded by the Arts and Humanities Research Council. Professor Rodney Harrison, active consultant on the exhibition, drawing on contributions from its team of academic researchers. For further information, see heritagefutures.org.
I bet people are gripping their seats at home.
Yeah. Oh, they got the space. They got. Oh, here. You'll like this. They have built heritage management dispatches uncertainty. These are the categories of recording loss at Orford Nest. It's a picture of the Elon Musk car orbiting Earth or somehow like on transit.
You see, that's people, government. Right, let's go back to September the 11th again. Right, if you knew that was a lie, right, how quickly would you be able to unravel the trick of space and launching stuff into space and it wouldn't take long, would it? You'd be like, hang on. If they're pretending someone's flying planes into buildings, maybe they pretended someone flew a rocket to the moon. You know what I mean?
You know about the Project 9/11 or something? Project A-119 to nuke the moon with the intention to gather a bunch of dust maybe off of the moon, having received the light show after the after effects of the light show.
Yeah, that's the equivalent of Michael Jackson hanging his baby's legs over the balcony. Oh, I'm gonna drop him. I'm gonna nuke the moon. It's bollocks. What was the other one when they said there's gonna be an impact on the moon? Do you remember that?
What was what?
He said there was gonna be an impact on the moon. Something. They were launching something at the moon.
Like, you know? a man-made.
No, something like a rocket. Or Obama. Huh. Obama launched a satellite at the moon or something. Just like, go and have a look. Someone did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, fucking idiots, man. People believe it.
So if you saw them send this fake nuke all the way to the moon and watch the light show, like not supposedly a TV screen with the men dancing around the moon, like a long distance away, but with your own two eyes, you saw a mushroom cloud.
You presume I have two eyes,
don't
you? Go on.
So if you saw a mushroom cloud on the moon, on the face of the man on the moon.
It'd be, It'd be from above, so I'd only see the ring. I wouldn't know if it was a mushroom cloud. No, I don't see the ring.
Okay, fine. So the ring, if you saw the ring in, like, you know, kind of the big expanding ring, would you then believe that we are on a ball, as you put it?
Right. So if I saw your big expanding ring, would then I start fantasizing about balls? Maybe. 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 No, you're terrible. You are so bad. It depends. Really impossible that they could pretend to do an explosion on the moon.
Yeah, it's all, all pretend.
You know, we're going to launch something like a satellite that's gone rogue, and we're going to aim at the moon or something, and its dust will show.
No. The whole point of this thought experiment is about something that you could see yourself. So the thought of, like,
them. They say that happened already. That's what I mean.
No, they didn't do that.
No, I'm sure they did. They said the satellite is losing.
Crash,
crash satellite the moon, and then measure its.
I remember that. Okay, spacecraft crashes into moon in search of water. NASA successfully smacks a satellite and spacecraft into a crater near the moon's south pole.
That's the final video.
Whatever, you know. No, I don't care. Like, it's just. This is the trickery stuff. Like, I'm not saying that NASA's all bad or anything. It's just that, like, this is not, like...
NASA's not real, man. It's an art house. When that rocket comes out, it literally, it's a one-time art show. That's what it is. Boom. And it takes off.
Okay, so if Von Braun, if you and Von Braun sat in lawn chairs on your own front porch and watched the expanding ring of a rocket launched from Von Braun's backyard, and then you wait, like, I don't know how long it takes for a rocket to go from Earth to the supposed ball moon, for all these moon ballers, and then you watched, would you become a moon baller at that point?
Up until I was 25, 26, I would have gladly jumped on a rocket and gone into space. With only 6 months' supply of food, just to be the first to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That was up until around about 2005. I believed all that shit. So,
the most interesting thing that we've talked about. The most interesting thing is about this live action experience, like the hoaxes in the, go and see the Dead Sea Scrolls with your own eyes, like that museum exhibit, that type of thing.
No, this
behind the glass. Yeah. Okay. So here is the difference between the behind the screen or in the screen experience versus the behind the glass.
No, Phil, it's just stories.
So what? This is the human experience of stories. So yeah, that's not changing anything.
No, it's just the stories. It's the stories. Look, they know they can't do war anymore. They know they need to occupy people another way. Like I say, if you were in charge of six billion kids for the summer. You'd have fucking activities planned. And some of them kids are going to get into street fights and do drugs and die and road rage and all these things. Some of them are going to follow the rules and eventually, you know, they're going to get universities. And that's it. Some people follow the rules. Some people, the story's for everyone. That's why gangs are controlled, you know. Levels. Gangs have always used Masonic symbols. It's the same hidden hand, like you say. The left hand path, whatever you want to call it, you know, there is a way to the top. Usually it means some sort of, I don't know, brutality. But,
well, that's a bit even more invasive and live action oriented. The actual participation in the movement or a gang of sorts, miniature gang that you get to, like, get indoctrinated into some belief system that they mold into some bigger narrative, and that's wild.
First of all, join a gang. We're in a gang. People would say we're in a gang. We're in the fakeologist gang. They'd say that because we've had conversations and we talk. We're having a coffee or a cup of tea. You know, so people would say, well, these are clearly not in cahoots, but they've clearly got an allegiance to each other over us and two strangers.
I'd take a fake bullet for you. I'd take 10 fake bullets for you. I'll up the ante.
Yeah, but it's apparent, isn't it? So you get the same people at the upper level who are, you know, you know, they have the same interests to do with business control in the place, then it's not hard, and the system's in place to remember people are stupid and don't pay attention, you know. So it's not easy, it's not hard, and people only have a certain.
Yeah, but you're just speaking from the fakeologist gang point of view, the indoctrination that exists here of they're all out there and they're too stupid to appreciate this stuff.
I'm not saying people are stupid for not appreciating. I'm saying people are stupid because they don't know they realize they're being tricked. You know, people have been told that the baddie is on their level. You know, the baddies, you know, the working class, the baddies, you know, if you're a soldier, the baddies, the opposite soldier, the baddies is always on level. But you're not told that the baddie is literally the one that sells you food, the one that keeps you alive, the one that you see on the TV, that they're the baddies. Yeah.
That's the conspiracy culture's message, that those are the baddies.
Well, yeah, but all they've done is they've just pointed out and said, oh, look, these people are in control, and that's all that this conspiracy theory culture is anyway, and that's why the internet thrives on it. There's none of that's really, there's no one at the top of the capstone of the pyramid. You know, it's just the controllers, and the controllers and not here to be feared or anything like that. It's just, you know, it's the humans which are the, us, you know, the control is not, the control's not real, is it? We've already established that. You know, it's a trick. So it's just people tricking other people.
And that's how we eat.
Pretty much. But if you can't trick everyone, so once me and you talk to other people and just say, look, this isn't real, and before you know it, you know, you don't need a video, do you?
Say the last part.
You don't need a video for that.
That's
all it is.
About, you can't trick everybody. Where are you going with that?
No, I'm saying, look, you're not trying to prove anything to anyone else, are you?
Oh,
you're trying to discover stuff yourself. Yes?
You can't untrick everybody? Is that your point?
No, you're confusing me now. No, look, what I'm saying is, right, look, if you're convinced of something, okay, and I know that not to be true, right, it doesn't matter how much I bang on at you saying, no, look at this, yeah, can overpower you, even if you get you to look at it, you're not going to look at it, you're going to be, you know, totally against it. But if I just nonchalantly say, no, I don't believe that, I don't believe this, and carry on with my day, talking normal, you're going to go, well, why is this guy like this? You're not going to think he's crazy. If, you know, you might be for a second, but the next time you speak to me, you know, I might tell you something that rings true. That's just the way to be. You know, there are people out there in the real world who are stupid who literally pick up on what you said. If you say, I don't believe Joe Kennedy made all that money in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, the 50s, only to have three of his sons down the camera. You say that someone who's looked into the Kennedy assassination, who's really, really, you know, got something invested because he bought a book.
Say the last part again, sir.
Someone's bought a book on the Kennedy assassination, they've already got something invested. You tell them a couple of lines about, you know, about what are the odds, and before you know it, they're questioning themselves. That's as simple as it is.
That's an interesting facial expression. I said to this one woman, like, she was wearing a Beatles shirt.
Is my camera on? What's going on here? How do you know what I did then with my face?
Oh, no. I'm saying the facial expression of, like, questioning one's own total sense of, you know, how everything fits together when you say, like, that the guy made all this money and only to have all three of his eldest sons die on camera. Like that just drives a nail, like, right through the canvas of their existence, and then has to, like, it's befuddlement, I guess, is the expression on the face or something.
You see, you always come up with these new words. I don't know the Elvish words.
Just like loss of any idea what's going on. Like no sense of what's going on.
No, because all it is, it's the equivalent of someone telling you something that you didn't know. So, you know, it depends, obviously, the weight of truth, you know, is in you, you know. You know, if you say Father Christmas isn't real, someone really believes in Father Christmas, that's fucked them up. Someone who was having inclinations that Father Christmas might not be real anyway, you know, just confirms what they were thinking. So, you know, the two big differences there. So maybe not befuddlement, but and nonchalantly say things like that. Good afternoon, Russ.
Good afternoon, girls.
Hey, ladies. Yeah, Phil's hey,
Mike, Mike check.
Mike, up in the day.
Mike check, Sim.
Check. One, two. No, Sibilance.
It's just way loud. It's just way loud.
You need me to be louder? Is that what you said?
No, you're fine.
It's pretty loud.
I got a new headset, so I got it cranked up all the way.
Awesome.
Yeah, you're fine. I've got you on 147.
I don't even know what that means.
Well, that's the highest break in snooker, but it's also what volume I've got you on.
Sibilance.
Sibilance. Is that what's that? What's that mean?
On I don't know. On Wayne's World with on the Saturday Night Live one time they had Tom Hanks as the guest host, right? So on Wayne's World they had Aerosmith, and Tom Hanks was the roadie, so he came out to. Do a mic check for him. He's like, 1, 2, sibilance. I don't know. That was fucking 30 years ago or something. I remember.
You still remember the word.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm related to Tom Hanks in some distant way.
Well, you said this.
Holden is a Freemason. He must be a Freemason, right?
Let's hope so.
Wayne's World was 1992.
Excellent.
What about the movie?
That was a reference to who? Where did Tom Hanks do an appearance?
On Saturday Night Live, which Wayne's World came from.
Oh, right.
So how are you related without giving away where you live?
I don't know. Well, his family's from the Shire, and now I got on the Hanks side. I got some relatives on the Hanks side. His mom's Nancy Hanks is one of his ancestors, who's also an ancestor of mine, supposedly.
So anyway, hey, Sim, what's your favorite museum exhibit? Growing up or like recently, what did you really fall in love with?
Seamless.
Huh? Yeah.
When I was a kid, we had a museum in my hometown, and it was, you know, one of these third string museums, but they had a, what's the word? Like where they have like a setup of like the way things used to be, you know? And it was like an old timey dentist's fucking office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it had all like the dental tools of the 19th century. Man, I used to love that thing. I used to love to stare into that thing.
That far back.
Yeah.
What did you love about it?
Just how archaic it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just looked. You know, it had like a bone saw in there too. So it was also like a surgery. It had. Some gruesome looking equipment, and I just thought it was, you know, it really painted the picture of the past for me, I guess. Or what I thought the past was, you know, just.
And that was the top of the range dentist as well.
I'm sure. It was enough to have his office copied for all the time in memoriam, so.
I remember once we were in town, and a teacher took us, literally just said, oh yeah, come down here, and we went into an old police station, and it was just like, you know, a little bit had been closed off and just kept, you know, just literally they just closed off a part of a building that was underground, and the cells, and you had the old wooden pillow, you know, where the bread's just raised, and it's a pillow. And that was comfort. But it was all right. I made a pillow. It looked all right.
Yeah. I don't remember. I remember like, I can't remember if it was the Smithsonian or if it was like a different museum in Washington, D.C. But I remember going in there and they had like the blue whale hanging from the ceiling. You know, that was awesome. I can't remember if that was the Smithsonian or not, but that was a huge thing for me. Seeing like the giant sloths and all that stuff. I loved all that when I was younger.
Yeah.
But that was and like primitive man, you know, and his diorama, life-size diorama. Mm-hmm. I thought all that was
man. He always had a 70s haircut.
Yeah, exactly. He looked like my dad in the old pictures.
Nice. But yeah, he used to laugh. He'd say blue whale, 100 tons. And it's just like, no, it's not.
The largest animal that's ever lived, they said.
Yeah, I don't give a fuck how heavy a blue whale is. The fuck, how are you going to weigh a blue whale?
So Russ, the human side of the museum experience gives you a sense of archetypes who are creating this experience for you. Like the if you go to the science museum, the astronaut is a very archetypal kind of role to play in society that the young child aspires to. You know, I want to be an astronaut. But like
that's usually on the way in the space exhibit as well. I've noticed that.
Yeah. So which, and then we were talking about Egyptian museum exhibits before. So like the archaeologist or like the tomb raider bringing back the gold. Like which kind of like or like the Neil deGrasse Tyson with his telescope on his lap or something, like, you know, his telescope between his legs. I'm just saying, like, you know, they set up these characters for us. Like Neil deGrasse Tyson is like, he's like a wrestler. He's a big guy. Like he's got all this power. He's like,
we've got a question from 6-year-old Delqua. And he liked to ask, was it the Metropolitan Museum of Natural History? And that question's to original simulant.
No, I think the Met is in New York, right?
That's the one he's referring to. Yeah.
No, the one I went to was in Washington D.C.
The Smithsonian.
I've never been to any museums. I've never been to New York City, and so.
But the Smithsonian's in D.C. The Science Museum in D.C. is the Smithsonian, right?
There's several Smithsonians in D.C. Maybe not several, there's like three. But there's also other museums, too, and I can't remember. You know, like there's like the, I can't remember the name of it now. But anyway.
I'm just saying,
the archetypes or the civic saints.
Yeah, civic saints, cool, good term. But what kind of mental picture? Do you have that you can recall, or like would you even maybe point to as your own guiding forces? Like I don't know, just any kind of like architecture.
Jedediah Springfield,
Flash Gordon, Perseus, Flash Gordon.
No, but in the museum, this is like. Yeah.
I don't know. In the museum itself, like what do I think of? I don't know, like Ben Stiller, not at the museum. I'm not sure what you're. Like
Ben Stiller in the museum, he's a security guard, right?
I don't know the previous. I think so.
So he's the night shift security guard. So that's an archetype. Where?
What's the way you're going with this? It turns into a belly movie. I'm having it.
the kind of theater of a museum experience has roles to play. So the cosmologist, the archaeologist, like the Neil deGrasse Tyson, Indiana Jones, the dentist or something, like, you know, you, like what's his name? Steve the comedian playing the dentist in Steve Martin. So just like the characters having like the night shift security guard, like if the museum experience was a play, what would the names of the character roles be? Like night shift security guard, civic saint one, civic saint two, civic saint, like these guys who are set up to.
No, we've already seen it. If you've seen that at the museum, you've seen what happened. You're asking, that's what happens. Like, was his name Robin Williams, his general, whatever his name is.
And the historical figure, like in the diorama, that's one of them. That's definitely like the prototypical, stereotypical model of some past human doing something like the
The Indian in the cupboard, kind of, in it. Like
Yeah.
Well, so you're asking which one is my favorite?
I don't know. I'm not necessarily.
Okay.
Any. Jay Dyer's line.
Jay Dyer.
Aristotle's. Okay, whatever. So, yeah, just.
Talking about the pretend fucking philosophers, or what? I know I'm a real now. I've had enough of them. The brown one's real. All the Brown philosophies are real, and they're a lot cleverer.
Napoleon's virtue signaling again.
That's it.
I like my my supposed Arab philosophers too, right? Your Arab astronomers.
Yeah, I'm not having them English. The white ones walking around with togas on an island where they couldn't support themselves and living under fucking weird laws where they could have kids running around. That's some mad concept that pedos had made up and managed to blag everyone. Yeah, it's not going to rub with me, sorry.
I feel like we've diverged onto different tracks here.
Yeah, I got a joke. Scared of pedophiles. Grow up.
Peterphile.
Night at the museum has night shift security guard, veteran security guard, museum docent or teacher. It's a
Van Dyke and Mickey Rooney. I think you'll find
taxi driver, fiance, and the boss.
Fiance.
Okay, so what character attributes or the roles are we as modern humans in this trickery intended to experience? What roles?
I'm the fiance there because I don't believe in the magic that's going on in his life because he's dead.
You haven't gotten married?
Yeah, he's a deadbeat. Dad, the magic that's going on any of the bullshit off the little lad. You know what I mean? So, no, I'll be the fiancé in that.
And then the
can I play two parts?
The tools of the set pieces. Here we have wax model, mummy, bronze statue, miniature, another model, wax model, model. I guess these things are just Indian covered like things that just come to life, basically. So, what roles though? That's what I'm curious. I don't know. I can leave it alone if you don't want to.
I'm going to play this game.
I like to be the enchanted child. You know, that's kind of like
yeah.
The one I aspire for, I guess at least. I mean, that's probably what we all want deep inside.
You just want ahead again. You just want ahead again. No,
I'm not bald. What are you talking about? I'm bald.
You will be.
If you're bringing your kids to the museum for one of these science museums, that's the model you have in your mind about what you intend for your child to experience. Is that role?
Well, you'd hope, right? I mean, you could also have them hoping to be like the inspired person. Like, have them.
Well, that's what they're there for, aren't they?
I don't know if it's enchantment or inspiration, or maybe a little of both, but what's the role of the muse was the tutelary deity, kind of. So
yeah, I think the message, I fucking hate using this word, I'm saying when the buildings were built, it was a good message.
Sean would say kind of is that you'd conquer, I think what Sean would say to put words in his mouth is that if, a land is conquered when they muse.
Yes.
And
yes. You gotta, yeah, I have something to look at. You totally controlled. I have something to look at.
I've kind of captured the spirit of the city or whatever. But I just got power or story. But
yeah, and we see that. That's very similar to when like libraries go into towns and things. Seem brilliant and there's nothing wrong with it, but nevertheless a lot of I've been into these big scams, but it was a trade, wasn't it, and finding new and discovered stories and on display.
Yeah, or just making them.
Yeah, I was just making them. Yeah,
about the there's several stories about it, like that. The factories in China, supposedly, that specialize in counterfeit fake dinosaur bones.
That made me think of another factory, and it like fits in nicely. What do you guys think of Andy Warhol?
Factory.
Yeah.
I think I never met her, but she. I don't know. I never met any albinos. Old Andy, I don't know. I don't know much about him.
I've got some caricature in my head now. You know, it's going to be on the, like, page.
Mm-hmm.
Here, or whatever. Icon, I suppose. I don't know. Here on the Warhol, anyway. Oh, there you go. Anyway, yeah. Objet d'art, people making dinosaur bones. Yeah, why not? You know, people buy them. People buy fake eggs. People buy everything. You know, you're into
that. That's a Jurassic Park, prop that people want to have a copy of, I think. I mean, do people, is that story, is are making these replicas or things that they're stuff? Like, what is this? Is this that the.
Those aren't real. I'm going to say that the ones that the legitimate people or the paleontologists who come across nutrients in the ground that are bone shaped or whatever. I'm going to say their ones off the same conveyor belt as the Chinese one. But there is a market for them, obviously. So why not China having the first factory doing it? Because they seem to have the first factory doing everything else. So that makes sense. But yeah, they've been making fake bones for years and doing things to bones. And, you know, all you have to do is put them with some sort of acid for a bit, take them out, dry it off, put them somewhere else, and then all of a sudden, you know, they start deteriorating. Oh yeah, why not? Delquest put a picture up of the blue whale there. Look at it, 100 tons. No one knows what the fuck. I would be there when they weighed that. Because, yeah, nah, you're not weighing a whale, idiots.
So Napoleon, when you went to these museums, were you the enchanted child or the inspired child?
No, that was wonderful. I'd go there and sit with them kids, mate. They're brilliant. I'd write on board. I just treat it like space. Yeah, come on, let's find out. You know, look, there's always going to be. Some of the stuff's real. That's all that, you know.
So if you were enchanted and you're still enchanted, then that's part of your...
I'm more enchanted. Now I know. Now I've worked out what they're trying to kid you with. You know, I'm not kidded like people do Adam and Eve. I'm not kidded like people nowadays who believe in atoms and evolution. I'm fucking... There you go. I'm no more awake, am I? The fact that I just don't believe in two things that other people do. You know, that's the thing again. Is like, well, you explain this to me, and this, I'm not explaining your assumptions. No way. I don't believe in this fucking evolution, and I don't believe in the Garden of Eden bollocks or Genesis. You know, I just believe we've always been here. I don't believe half this history we've been told, and I don't believe literally this land is what we're being told. I believe it's massive. You know, but yeah, there you go. Crazy beliefs. But I tell you what, I don't believe half the stuff that was told years ago, and I don't believe after stuff I'm told nowadays. I'm no clever, am I? I don't believe they weighed a blue whale. I'm telling you now.
On the same topic of enchantment, when you walk in, you see the astronauts. My culture ethnology studies teacher in college said that what he wants so much is to go to Vegas all the time. For him, To walk into the spectacle and be overwhelmed with excitement and enchantment for him is like, even though he knows that this is the designed experience, that he just still loves. I mean, he's not the inspired gambler. He's the enchanted gambler.
Get to be, it's kind of cool, like, to go into Vegas, like, I haven't been there in almost 30 years, but you see, like, the simulacra of it all, you know, and you see, like, New York, and stuff. It's kind of cool. You see the fake, you know, the fake, Luxor and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's cool to see the simulation. Like,
I always love seeing just, old bits of Vegas, you know, the bits that got torn down from years ago.
Yeah, the Golden Nugget and the Palm, and stuff, the trash, the old trashier Vegas,
yeah,
Debbie Reynolds Hotel.
Yeah, some of that you just look at it going, oh, look at that now. And then, like, literally before they were tearing it down, everyone just goes either in robbing it, or you'll see a couple of videos of it before it's taken down and go in the place. And then, yeah, because America is a wonder. I mean, I know people live there, I'm sorry, but it is like a big Disneyland. You know, I'm not saying our country's not ours, it's the big Harry Potter land when you look into it, it's, you know, pretty much the same. But to us, it was a big Disneyland. You know, you had celebrities all over the place in between. You had cowboys, and you had Hollywood, and Disney, and Las Vegas. Wow, run by gangsters.
Oh, that's another one. That's another one. The celebrities that walk around, that people take their pictures with.
Oh, God, yeah. Have you seen the Superman documentary? That's brilliant, where the guy's there. It's
George Reed, the old one? Or the
It's the one with the people where they just get the pictures taken.
Wearing the costumes. I know you're talking about. Yeah.
Oh, God, that's so good. And he's really into Superman, and he's got the right costume. He's actually got one of Christopher Reeve's costumes that I was given to me. And no shit, because you proper look like him. But yeah, and you're one step away from this dream, aren't you? Over there in that particular part of the world where you can go from being no one to being famous, and you sort of hear these stories. I don't know how real the stories are, but yeah, these people rising up the ranks and becoming these really famous people. And
the American dream, they call it.
Yeah, and people just like emulating, famous characters. So if you can make some money doing it, you do it. And they love doing it. I mean, it doesn't like easy work, but, they make money doing it. It's part of this archetype that people fall into when you stop in Disneyland, don't you? They can be Mickey Mouse. You don't walk off in a rant. But it's not even the real Mickey Mouse. Or do you? I don't know. Maybe you do.
I don't know. You don't go taking the piss out of it,
No, that's what I mean. And So, I couldn't even mock this on telly when I was watching it. I was just like, oh, yeah, what, yeah. I see people doing it, having a bit of steak, and they're so happy. You know what I mean? And then you see this person's real life. It's just like, wow, it's a pretty sad example. I love doing it. It's weird. But you can see how, the surprise and, this experience imprint on people, especially in a place where it's designed to, imprint on your Hollywood, Vegas, even New York to a certain extent. So.
Did you guys see any of the celebrities amongst us when you went to these places of enchantment?
My cousin met John Stamos just last month
mm-hmm.
at Disney. Got a picture taken with him. Uncle Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea who John Stamos is. Say it again. I forgot. You did tell me.
John Stamos, man, he was on Full House, which is a show in America, so I don't know if you saw that. He was on, I don't know if anything else. He was, TV celebrity. You know who John Stamos is, Phil?
Yeah, actually, my friend, he had a picture of Disney World.
What the? Is it?
No. My, growing up. Like they actually had it free.
See?
Same.
My dad, him with a that they took on what's the New Jersey boardwalk place? They had the same thing going on. My grandmother would get filled with excitement to talk about, that time that we saw that guy and, we took a picture of him and stuff. She just lit up to talk about being able to be next to that guy.
I think it was a Jazz Fest, maybe, in New Orleans, maybe freaking 15 years ago or something. I saw Peter Jennings. It was right before he died, so whenever that was, it was, a year before that. I saw Peter Jennings coming out of a bar smoking a cigarette.
Peter Jennings, I know the name. Who was it?
I think it was ABC. He's a long time, news anchor guy.
The name.
I think he was Canadian. And, I'm always safe for him, too.
Stars and anchors. Both, neuro.
Favorite tattoos to have on a sailor. Sorry?
No, just that, the terms of the, fellow humans who draw the mass appeal as resembling the stars in the sky or the anchors in our cognitive maps.
Yeah, they are, but like the constellation, like the hero constellations from the past, right? Like they're not quite as heroic, but they're like the stars. You know, it's easy to see the analog between the two. But, you know, celebrity and the star. Hollywood, the silver screen, right? The stars are out tonight, baby.
That's what Andy Warhol called his cadre of fellow artists or that he would build up in his studio. He called them the superstars.
There's a picture of Peter Jennings there from Delcroix.
Delcroix met Peter Jennings?
For Sutherland. Delcroix is not coming in after what you said to him, Phil.
What did I say?
Oh, I can't repeat it. Okay. Delcroix agrees with me there. He says, there's no way in earth you could weigh a fucking blue whale. I'm paraphrasing, but yeah.
With a grain, right?
Yeah, all right. Look, if you're weighing a fucking blue whale, there's something wrong with you. Just get a buffer in out of a pencil and you're 100.
Well, you know, my dad was talking about the the crane they brought to, 20 years ago or so when he was working at a powerhouse in Indiana. They were building. They had to get the world's largest crane, you know. So they break this thing down from Chernobyl, I think, or somewhere in Russia, and it's broken apart, shipped over here to Indiana, put together, and that thing is like 100 tons. But they're able to weigh the crane. I mean, they're able to figure out how much the crane weighs. They're able to figure out how much the crane can lift. They're able to figure out how much the things the crane can lift weigh.
Well, that's it.
I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility to.
No, but as soon as the extent of, I mean, I've worked when there's people lifting like 90 ton beams, and as soon as they're lifted, you know, 8 foot away from, you know, the center of gravity, and obviously it turns into, you know, 150 ton. And then so on and so forth. So just, you know, there's going to be some sort of expertise, but I'm sure they've been saying it's a 100-ton animal for a while. So maybe now they've got... Someone double-check. Go on, Phil. Get your Google out.
I'm not sure. I'm not saying they did weigh, but I mean, you know, you can cut some section of it off.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Yeah, you can get some buffer. No one's going to double-check. That's what I'm saying.
Well, they won't ship me any whale blubber. They won't ship me any blue whale skull to, you know.
To keep them up. You know, I mean, you put legs on that and you've got a stegosaurus, so I don't know.
Whip that stegosaurus ass.
Yeah.
That's the biggest whale. That thing, and all it eats is like the microscopic freaking, you know, plankton or whatever.
Yeah.
How did it get so big eating that? Hard to believe.
It's wonderful, isn't it? It's really wonderful. You know, and then they just go and catch, you know, loads of them and chop them up, which isn't wonderful.
Yeah, well, I'd like to see one day all the animals become extinct. That'd be right.
Yeah, well, I don't see them in the real world, so I always automatically think there's loads of them anyway. You know, I just think, there's tons, because they tell us fucking bullshit, don't they?
Oh, yeah, how do they know? How do they know how many there are, you know? There's only 400. How do you know? You know what I mean?
I'd like to see an increase in bears in America. That'd be nice.
I saw the, when I was at the...
In city.
Yeah.
I was at the Animal Kingdom safari expedition last month, a few months ago maybe, and they were talking about the okapi, the what are they called, the jungle ghost, this thing.
Ooh, the chupacabra thing.
No, I wish. But they were saying that this thing hadn't been discovered by, you know, the white man. Until 1901 or 1902. So, it's not that long.
Oh, is this that white-faced gorilla?
No. Whatever it is. No, but it wasn't until that, around that time either, that they accepted that one of these large gorillas was real. Might have been the fuck was it? So that's why King Kong was like a science fiction movie or something. You know?
I know, it's a great one.
They didn't believe in the mountain gorilla. They didn't believe it was real.
I tell you what, I love it when you get them lads. You go, oh no, this is a clear indication of them trying to stereotype the black male in America at the time. And you're like that going, no, this is a film about a big giant gorilla, man, I'm telling you. You know what I mean? It's funny. Because why? Because when you get to the island, there's big fucking giant dinosaurs and fucking crocodiles and everything else. You're like, all right, okay then. It's fucking, yeah. Right, it's funny. But yeah,
the egghead.
But that's what I mean. That wasn't a myth to people that live there. People knew about it.
Yeah, but they say, oh, we've never seen it, so it must be
like the ground ape. The ground ape. We only discovered the ground ape recently, didn't we? And the ground ape is literally like it's about 25% bigger and stronger. It kills jaguars. You know what I mean? It sleeps on the deck. It doesn't even hide in a tree. And that's the ground ape. But it's fucking massive. The jaguar jumps on that. It just pulls it off and batters it.
Jaguar.
Yeah, I know. It's funny, isn't it? And when you see it, you're just like, right, yeah, but there's not many of these things. And you just look at it and think, is it just a big ape? And it actually looks, it looks a little different. So, maybe that's just undiscovered as well. But that's not the type of thing you want to go looking for, is it? You want to pull your arm off.
I'd hunt it to extinction. Just like those great whites. I hate those things. They kill all those, too. I never had a bad experience with them, but from the movies, I can tell that they're just evil.
Yeah.
By nature. So, it'd be best if they were exterminated.
Yeah, they fucking... And that
Phil, what's on your list of animals you'd like to see exterminated?
The lionfish.
Oh, there you go.
You know about that one?
The lionfish that looks all weird with all its big, tentacled face, kind of. Yeah, fuck that thing. I don't like fish at all, either. They look weird with their human-looking mouths and shit.
Birds are worse. The way they just turn their head sideways to look at you.
I don't like birds either. They're fucking weird.
Turn. Fuck off.
Turn the ocean to glass, right?
Concrete. And then you can park on it.
Fucking Joni Mitchell.
Oh, God. Paved paradise. The ocean isn't paradise. The ocean's like the...
Alan Partridge said, what people fail to find in their blinkered view of the world is by paving paradise, you actually reduced a lot of, you reduced the fucking traffic, you know what I mean? And a lot more cars could park, so it didn't fit in with a blinkered view on the world, but there you go. Love Alan Partridge, he's the best, man. There's a thing though, let's just go back to this, right? So, Phil's talking about all these weird archetypes. Let's just say, for example, right, these are real. Because most of them don't imprint on us. All the teachers are shit. Right? Every fucking cable repairman in America will give you fucking cable for free on the snide. You want every cop is a bad cop in the TV movies. There is no archetypes unless it's always the opposite. You know, everybody's got these fucking, these vices. You know what I mean? The only good things were in comic books or superheroes or something like that. And even them nowadays, they're all busted up.
You have the stereotype and you have the archetype in like a dialectic,
Phil's asking about archetypes and I'm giving him stereotypes. Yeah, sorry, go on. Like drunk Russians. There you go. I don't know if all of offended drunk Russians. No, I've offended Russians who don't drink anymore. Who the fuck have I offended there? Anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah. So, go on, Phil.
What were you saying about, there being archetypes and then cable repairmen?
He was giving you the stereotype of the... you're kind of giving the stereotype.
Yeah, okay, so that I have a shallow exploration here?
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Right. Okay. Some stereotypes. The soccer mom. Right. The
you're just getting a
I know, but you're asking for archetypes, and I'm saying I don't think there is in what you're asking for.
In a museum environment, in this specific set of museums.
But you're asking what we're going to get from it. It's not about the characters. And I've already said to you, my museum is a walk-in, and it's signs. There's no interaction.
Yeah, that's one of the museums.
Yeah, so it's all about achievements. It's all about making you go, we've done that. We've done that, look at what we've discovered, look where we've come from, look where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, look how backwards other countries are, that's a big thing in museums. You've got to make sure you show how backwards they are, even though they're not.
Wait, what's backwards?
You got to maintain History? That your country's the best, haven't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, so they don't have, like, cross-cultural museums. It's just about, like, ethno...
You're not going to have a proper museum, are you, telling you about how America was, you know, how the West was born, so to speak.
Museum of Fakeology.
No, I mean, they'll back out the room and say, yeah, it wasn't quite like this, but they're not going to... They won't trumpet the truth, just like England's being backed off from their empire now. So the museums no longer work now, you know. Now people walking in there going, well, you know, you actually, they might have to actually go back to the people that living on that land now.
If imprints are the driving motivation for the production of these museums to imprint cultural markers, and yet maybe there are others, what kind of other impacts do you think they have in mind?
I don't think they are. I think it's just a remnants of a lost, forgotten age now. Like the Royal Mail. I mean, you know, over here they've still got the Royal Mail. You put your stuff in the letterbox, but that's been privatized pretty much. It's not Royal anymore. Same as all these different companies. But some of them need to maintain.
Well, the cultural preservation. Museums are like a mecca of cultural preservation. Like the people who run that are supposedly not faking things. They're preserving history. So, like, that's one of the drives.
Yeah, and then exhibitions with each other. We've seen it go on. None of it's real, is it? You know, none of the stuff which is meant to be juicy little bits, none of that's real. Unless you're really into dinosaurs and mummies. And...
Well, the story would go, that you'd go to, like, Egypt 300 years ago or something, when they'd never even heard of any of this shit in the first place, but apparently. But they'd go to the fucking Egypt. They'd... bust into these
tombs.
Yeah, the tombs, the fucking necropolis or whatever. They dig out all the basically get sent to either Paris, London, New York, or Berlin or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So one of these four places is getting all the booty. And then and then they go into some kind of fucking field house there and they're presented for the aristocrats to kind of trace their their lineage through. So, I mean, I guess that's what role it supposedly served then. But you know, I think it's all a bunch of that shit's just made up too. Of course, like they just, you know, somebody cooked it up and
make more sense of why there would be a legitimate interest as well. You know, to me, you know, because the first of all, treasure hunters, and then second of all, you know, the information. What information you could find something which is really relevant. Well, yeah, after that,
the past is created in the present. You know what I mean? Like they don't. Mm-hmm. It's not like you go find this window into the past and then you see it. You know, it's all made up now, or whenever now was. So
yeah, it's
like an industry of creating the past. Because it's not like, I mean, who's going to double check it? How you going to verify it? You know, I got the artifact right here. You know, I got it. Well,
yeah, That same principle, I'm saying that principle only didn't come with that. It came with all the other stuff that was before it. It was only afterwards that you went, right, big exhibition, why, look at, you know, this dinosaur, look at this, whatever it is, you know, these new plants. Oh, once you get the exhibition going, then you can just get people and say, well, look at this, because nobody's going to check.
And even if they check, what are they going to do? I mean, how are they going to prove it? How are they going to disprove it? That you've made up all the fucking.
That's not one of the steps. That's not okay. So the step that you took out that they put on the table was about like there were the treasure hunters. They brought it to the big city aristocrats, but then the aristocrats, in their good will, decided for it to be shared with the people in their in the people's museum. It's always the people's museum. You know, that's how these places are. It's not like the aristocrats' museum for the people. It's the people's museum for the people. And then it's never the responsibility of the people to do the checking of what's in their museum. They don't like, you know, hey, you know, we kind of like brush back a layer and realize something. It's you know, it's run by the experts. So,
well, of course, it's the emperor's new
stock. It's very hands off. The museum is very hands off, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, this is the emperor's new stock, or the emperor's new, you know, emperor's new museum. You can't check everything. Nobody's expecting you to. Not only that, if it's a new exhibition brought to your town in the olden days, it's probably there in a building that was been made by a benefactor or someone who's made a foundation, so probably highly respected. You know, so it's got all these steps of people believing in it. And then you get in there and it says, oh, look at this, we've found mummy. And you're like, wow, you know. I mean, it doesn't really imprint on you. It gets added to. That's it. It's
message, right? The museum, the medium, it is, right?
But the way they're set out is wonderful, especially when you go in.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. When you walk into a museum, the one where we are, it's got stuffed animals, all shapes and sizes, birds, all the stuff at the museum where I am.
Stuff, okay. Everything's stuffed.
Everything's stuffed. Every animal's going.
The pterodactyl isn't stuffed. It's ripped out stuff and then put stuff in, right? Yeah. The pterodactyl is an art project. Like, not that the other one isn't.
Maybe it's not. Maybe it's just a skeleton. But yeah, we've got every animal going stuffed. It's wonderful. We've also got
sculptures. So okay, the sculpture is another archetype.
The artifacts, they're just all real animals. Yeah. And you'd be arrested.
Why?
Because you've got the penguin stuff.
So? People can't do that?
To do that. I don't think you're allowed to stuff golden eagles anymore. No. So, yeah.
Artifacts. So, like, undoubtedly hands-off, but, like, people have, like, recreations of stuff. There are these, This is fake as shit, because, like, this is impossible. They took cameras into a museum with a Nefertiti bust, and they took 3D of the thing, and then they recast it. Like,
Nefertiti got a titties cast.
Yeah, they have her breasts. They just have a bust of her.
Huh? How's it going, Denny?
Phil's making me laugh.
How you, Phil? Or should I call you Mitchell? Or what the fuck? You keep changing your name.
Phil Blanks. Back to Phil Blanks. And Del, will you turn your microphone up a little bit? There you go.
Again.
Because I've got you on full, and you're quite quiet.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah. Del, what's your favorite museum? Or, like, which experiences in museums do you, like, immediately recall, like, yeah, that was...
Well, you put me in mind of that whole, you know, my childhood experience, going to the Metropolitan Museum of Modern Art, Natural History in New York, and, you know, back to the blue whale stuck on the ceiling. Now, those pictures I looked up there, it's not in my memory of what it looked like at the time, you know, as a young lad. But it was an amazing sight to see this huge blue whale stuck on the ceiling, you know.
Why?
Plus, that I think I talked about this before, but they had an exhibition going on at the time, and it was King Tutankhamun's mummy and all that stuff. And but the way they had that displayed was that you could only look at it through a sort of a mirror. It was like a refractor mirror in a telescope. It was like a corner mirror, so you didn't even see directly into the, you know, the esophagus. You sort of got a mirrored image of it through glass.
And for you, this was part of like a what kind of experience would you like frame it as?
Like a wow experience at the time, you know. I was 9 years of age, and it did make an impression, you know. So it was pretty cool at the time.
Later, when you were more mature, did you ever go to other museums?
I think, well, yes. I've been to the Imperial War Museum in London. I've seen I've been to many a museum. You know, over the years, the more, you know, like a lot of it, like, you know yourself, you know, my thinking on it in the whole fakery terms of it, you know, it's, I go to anything now and I just see the duplicity behind it all, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you call it a museum or whatever. But
Disenchantment.
It was a Disenchantment, yeah. It was an exhibition down in Cork, you know, the Titanic and all that. They have it down there all the time because, the town, would you believe? But it was originally called Queenstown, funny enough. And that was the last port of call that the Titanic made, allegedly, before its sinking. And
which one?
Queenstown.
Okay.
Just hang on, I just have to ask me, Miss. What is the town down in Cork? It used to be Queenstown. I can't think of the name of it. Cove. Yeah, Cove. C-O-B-H. That's how it's spelt. It's pronounced Cove. But it used to be called Queenstown before Ireland became so-called independent. And that was the last port that on its maiden voyage.
You saw some stuff from the Titanic in a museum?
That's what I'm saying. They have a semi, you know, museum there. Kind of like.
Yeah.
Visitor center.
Yeah. It's not just the museums that are in the big cities of whatever, like, stereotypical or whatever performance that they do there. These are the monuments that they erect where something on the same place of the event.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah, this is how they cement it. They use love England. Visitor centers everywhere.
Yeah.
Visitor center. Okay.
Visitor centers. You know, like the biggest one at the moment being the One World Tower. You know, and the 9/11 memorial.
Yep.
Center.
Right next to the monolith.
Yeah, that's right. And she was there just before Christmas and she took some photographs of it and, like, man, they've got lumps of steel in there and they've got all sorts of stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm. The cross, is the cross still there?
It solidifies it all. I'm not sure, I'll have to ask her, but they had the names of all the victims and all the kind. Stuff. That is set in stone now, 9/11, as far as that's concerned, you know. So there's your visitor center for that one.
Yeah, that probably cements it, doesn't it? Visitor center.
Now, other stuff like, say the Titanic, for example. Like, I bought years ago, they brought out a coin, and now it's not gold or anything, but it's some sort of coin. But here's the selling point of it. It allegedly has some coal that was retrieved from the engine room of the Titanic during their, you remember the Cameron, back in, what do you call it, salvage. They took certain items.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, and they're so called exclusive because there's only so much coal. It's like moon rocks. There's only so many of them, you know? And they still have them on sale to this day on eBay.
Is it like a fine slice?
It is. It's like a very thin, and it's embedded in the coin, you know?
What was there?
Exclusive.
Come on.
Yeah. They had them out, you know, it was coincidentally, you know, the 100-year anniversary, as it would be.
Mm-hmm.
So that was 2012.
So these go way beyond the gift shop. These are, like, collector's items. Is that?
Yeah. Yeah, they come with their own little certificate and they're numbered. So, yeah, I have one of them. I must take a few pictures of it and show it to you. But
do you remember that documentary, Del, about the people dressing up as superheroes in Hollywood and just having the pictures taken on, like, Hollywood Boulevard?
No, I was listening to you there earlier on talking about it, and it doesn't ring a bell immediately with me.
Right, well, anyway, there's a fella in it, he dresses up as Superman, but he talks about different things, and he goes into detail, because he says things like, you know, he used to hang out with, like, Liza Minnelli and, you know, all these different people, and, you know what I mean, loads of different people. And he's got all these bits of paperwork, and, you know, it is an industry that, which we wouldn't even, you know, exist. It's like beyond memorabilia, you know what I mean? Just like, though this is a... From this is a menu from hotel, you know. So when you talk about, like, the Titanic there, Phil, that that's just as popular as Superman to some people. The stories behind it, And then into the conspiracy world as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the big bankers were on it that died. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a multifaceted, narrative. That.
You know, all the bankers.
Yeah, so far.
Were they not all the good bankers?
Yep.
Yeah, no, the ones that cancelled and didn't go on the ship, you see. That's
That's it. They were the bad,
Warburg cancelled at the last minute.
Warburg missed the iceberg.
Warburg misses the iceberg.
What were you saying, Danny? The Titanic, in some sense, that I had.
Just saying when you were talking then about, you know, like, why is this, you know, is this popular? Yeah, because it's just as popular as people by having Superman cards and signatures.
We don't know.
I mean, you don't care if Debbie Reynolds signed a valet's mm-hmm. card.
But if you put a talk on change, right, think of the, you know, the biggest ship ever built, allegedly, unsinkable, it sinks on its first voyage, full of all the great and the good, allegedly, and the rich. And then down below, you had, you know, all the people who paid, basically down in the scratchers. That's a term from the cinema over here in Ireland. You know, you go to the pictures and the cheap. The scratchers, you know, all the people with heads be down there scratching. That's what the idea of the scratchers was. So, the same with the Titanic, you know, they had all the different levels of people, you know, the upper, the middle, and the lower glass all on one. And then, of course, it would have. And you would have to turn it into a love story then to get it even, more miles out of it, you know.
That's what I've looked at as the, significance of the story that they implanted into our consciousness here, that the transition to an industrial economy and into like this, like getting everybody off the land into these cities and stuff in the same ship together. So like they set us up to kind of appreciate, a unifying, you know, like everybody needs an enemy to unify, supposedly. So, and they need a story to bond with. So, like, I mean, there wasn't like a class warfare in it, in any regard. Like, it was the officials who locked the steerage below and wouldn't let them. You know, we can save ourselves. Just let us out. And they had to bust themselves out. That's like the story that they're setting up. Is like, I don't know, like these archetypes for the next several generations
a reflection, allegedly, of what the class system that was going on in them times. Could be deemed as a sort of like an ongoing photograph of setup in any colonial place, you know. There was actually a movie. I actually posted it on my YouTube channel there last year or sometime, and it was basically like that, where this ship sinks, not the Titanic now, but this ship sinks, and somehow or other, it was, and people survived in it, right? And they started, you know, with the aid of science, because there was some scientists on board, they were able to generate air, you know. And it developed into, that would have sunk, you know, in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And then it's discovered then in the 1960s. And, you know, there's people down there, and you see and it was like a Lord of the Flies scenario where you had a bunch of them trying to tell everyone else what to do. And then there was a split away. And then you had sort of like the savages types, you know. And, you know, they'd come and raid the more civilized places now and again. This kind of thing.
It's a fine film, that.
It is,
I can't believe how long it is.
Yeah, it is. Because it encompasses all these ideas. Mm. It really, for the time when it was made, what was it? The Nautilus? What the hell is it called?
I kept saying the Nautilus.
Not the Nautilus.
Is that the Poseidon Adventure?
No,
it's better than that. It's got Christopher Lee.
Yeah, like, this thing is sunk at the bottom of the ocean, and they develop into their own civilization. But in the ship,
they're also, I mean, there are multi-levels of effect there in that film. I mean, the Titanic also was remade because they had to explain why there were two bits of the Titanic on the ocean floor. So the first film, he sinks quite normally, you know, it goes sort of, you know, just in one piece. And then they found it was in two pieces at the bottom of the floor, and that's why Cameron did this incredible...
That was a great setup. That was a great setup.
It goes up one way and it goes the other way and it splits in two. That he tried to explain on the film what how it could... I mean, again, he tried to sort of basically turn the laws of physics around and show you something that couldn't happen.
What probably really happened was some young fella, some intern or something, stood on the model by accident, and they didn't have time to fix it, so they just had to put two bits of the model of the Titanic into the fish tank.
There you go. Salt.
To film it.
Next.
Okay, next.
Boss. Move on. Right, the evolution.
How are you, Matty, by the way?
Oh, I'm fine, thanks. New Dell, how's it going?
Yeah,
okay.
Hey, Matty, what about you? Did you have a, you ducked out earlier, so... Maybe some museums of music, something that led you into your path.
No, I've never been to. I've never been to. I remember going to some science museum as a kid. You know, which is quite fun, but it was the usual things. They were in those days. They were like, oh, you know, the squiggly bit of wire and another bit of wire, and you've got to go around it, and if you touch it, it goes. They could, you know, they could wow us easy when we were nine. It didn't take much. But, I've never been to a war museum.
You never touched a big silver ball and your hair went up in the air?
I've got one of them here, but it's not so big. The only kind of museums I go to, art museums, I've seen a few painters, you know, people when they come around. Otto Dix. I like Otto Dix. He's totally fucked up, but I like him. But, it says a lot about... So that says a lot about that person and his time when he was living or something like that. That's quite interesting. I don't mind an art exhibition every now and then. It actually can be sometimes quite mind-blowing. Oh, I went to a fucking amazing exhibition of altars from all around the Caribbean and all over the world, India as well, just people's altars, you know? All these, wow, amazing altars sometimes. They've got everything in there, you know? Everything. That was quite good. I remember having a lot of fun looking at all the different...
Any urinals in the old...
Oh, fucking hell. No, I don't know. There wasn't any Marshall Duchamp. No, that's something in for itself. But I haven't got a problem with that either. That's punk. I mean, fuck it. That's punk. What's wrong with that? It's punk in art. That's all it was. Fuck you. God, I'll show you how powerful, you know, how fucked up and how decadent the whole thing is.
It's in art.
Therefore, and people go, look at it. Isn't it decadent and fucked up? Yeah, that's the reason he did it.
Yeah, punks will not squat either.
Oh, right.
Do art museums have the same qualities to them as, like, these science museums? Because, like, an art museum, it's very different. It's very, like, art museums are not at all interactive.
Depends what the city is renowned for.
I would say, I was at an art museum and it was pretty much, there was some interactive art in it.
Yeah. These days, lots of interactive stuff. Well, and you get a tape, well, it used to be a tape, or you get a disc now, you know, and earphones and people, you can listen to that if you want, you know.
Okay.
They are fun.
The Saatchi Gallery, you know, Say No More Saatchi Gallery. But, yeah, they had sort of, like, perception-type exhibits where, you walk out onto this thing and it's like as if you're on the ceiling. It's very disorientated and you're kind of looking down but looking up at the same time. That was freaky. That happened to be there the year that I was over there.
I went to a museum, an exhibit in the Second Life of what it's like to experience a schizophrenic crisis or like a psychosis, and just so fucked up. But like, it was interesting because I explored the shit out of this. Like, this was when I was on Second Life. It's like a virtual world, still around, but this was like a long time ago. This was like 2003, 2000, something like that. And I was like just trying to find all the places that that people had set up like some exhibit of sorts for other people to come and like experience something. There were other cool places too, but like there was somebody who set up a demo of what this hypothetical invention of the future would be. It's like it's a holodeck where you have like a projection screens in a sphere around you, and then a treadmill that goes in every direction. So as you walk in any direction, the screen around you changes. And like nobody's made it. Nobody at that point had made that, but like it was like something that the films had simulated in like Star Trek. But this is something that they could see common. These people wanted or something, and then they set up an online exhibit of it.
That was portrayed too in a movie, and I hardly ever read new movies, but this newish movie from say maybe a couple of years ago. And in it, all the people like that into these, you know, crazy, you know, tower blocks or whatever. But the game console that they had at that stage was you were walking in on a treadmill and going like 360 treadmills and all that. Do you know that movie I'm talking about where someone like gave out one of the elders or whatever put in this program into it where if you found all these magic keys or whatever, you'd be, you know.
I remember that. Ready Player One.
Or whatever. And it was, I don't know, it was just like a modern day version of the put in Tron and all that. In one scene, it was like King Kong is there and he stops you from going around on this big race that they have. Do you know the movie I'm talking about? Anyone?
Denny said Ready Player One.
Ready Player One.
That sounds familiar. Yeah, that's it, yeah.
It's Spielberg's most recent one. But yeah, King Kong stopping you in the race when you're in the DeLorean.
Yeah.
It's still pretty hair-raising, seeing King Kong bounding alongside you. Yeah, it's amazing what they can do with graphics nowadays.
Well, we've had King Kong on the Empire State Building. We've had King Kong on wasn't he on the Twin Towers in one of the remakes in 79?
Oh, yeah.
You know what thick means in German? In German, thick means fuck. So they're graph thickers, and because they had a joke here. Do you know who the most famous graph thicker is?
Go on.
No.
I can't remember his name now, but it was basically Steffi Graf's husband. It's a very nice pun. I keep thinking about it.
Andre Agassi.
Totally off topic here, but it's all the time I hear things like that. Fiction, you know. You know, thick teeth.
Thick, yeah.
Very rude tonight.
Yeah. Taxidermist.
That's lovely.
I'm gonna mute, lads. I shall catch you later on. Take care.
Oh, bye.
I've got to go back.
I haven't chased you a while.
No, I've got a long, long day tomorrow. I'm going to mute. I'll probably come back, but I'm just going to mute for the time being. Because we've got to do a few bits, and it's already 10:30.
Yeah.
I'll say goodnight, don't worry.
Good night, Matt.
Yeah, as you see, I'm sorry I'm not in here. don't let me derail the conversation. Where were we going? Where were you? Were you hitting some good fakeology points or some?
We were ficting Steffi Graf behind her husband.
Yeah. Well, at least I kept it in, you know, it was marital.
I don't know.
Well, Del, like, I guess if there was an audio-driven experience for a virtual exhibit of some discovery of sorts, that'd be some archetype character you could relate to. A guy who's the golden tonsils of this virtual environment for people to go through some transformational...
I wouldn't know. My experience of Second Life, if I could even remember my password, is a robot body with a crate stuck on his head because he tried to open the crate to get something out of it and it just became part of the avatar. And I couldn't be arsed to fix it.
So. Walking around with a crate on your head. Crate head.
Second Life was still out there. Maybe Zal used to do Second Life in his time. He probably saw this robot.
Yeah, wandering around. It's still there in the recesses of the internet. Yeah, in the dark web. There are all these strange entities there. My God. Yeah, I mean, but it is interesting. It's true that, I mean, if people become so into their consoles, then they won't need very big apartments or flats or anything. You can have a,
yeah, you know. But you have your treadmill with your 360-meter laser array, you know, and your Soma, probably.
Mm-hmm.
You're there, and, you know, fixic, you know, another 5 years, there won't be motorized treadmills. You'll have to operate them, and what they'll be doing is generating electricity for...
Yeah, that's Black Mirror here, yeah, that's Black Mirror, isn't it? Yeah. It's exactly what he's got going, and they're all in those.
I've only seen some Black Mirrors.
That's one. Yeah, me too. I've only seen one or two, but the one I saw, yeah, there were these massive buildings, high-rise buildings, just full of walking conveyor belts, yeah, or bikes. I think they were bikes actually, and they were powering the energy. They were the electricity, right? So everybody was in these massive banks, and in front of them there was, you know, high-tech screen. They could swipe their hand in the air, and it would, and they could have any road they wanted, or they could go through play a computer game while they were watching or whatever. In fact, in his apartment, he had to pay to stop the porn adverts. He had to pay one of his, you know, it was all digital currency, but he had to give some of his kudos up to stop the porn adverts.
That sounds pretty, yeah.
That's Charlie Brooker.
Don't give them ideas, man. And then Charlie goes and makes a movie about it, or a TV series about it.
He's just released some interactive thing that I already heard Jason Horsley and his, you know, some of his people saying, I don't think we're going to play it. It sounds really dangerous. So, yeah, it's kind of an interactive thing where, again, every now and again, you make the decision which way it's going to go.
Yeah, it's kind of like the old school, you buy the book and you're reading the book, and then, you know, if you decide to do this, go to page whatever, and if you decide to do that, go to the other page. And have you ever seen those books?
Yeah. It's not new. The idea is not new. Yeah, it's just always trying to get the reader to have some sort of agency and interact.
Choose your adventure. Mm. Choose your adventure.
Yeah. To a degree, you're still in the, you're playing their game all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're giving your hands to Charlie Brooker. This is the thing that some people say. I'm not so sure I want to kind of lend Charlie Brooker any part of my psyche, even for however long. I mean, you see, I've got his book here. Someone bought it me for Christmas. And I think the last one was called, I mean, these are quite old now, 2006 or something like that. But these columns, you know, I Can Make You Hate.
Yeah. Well, I did see, back to that series, I did see the one, of course, where, you know, the whole blackmail and the prime minister thing.
Oh, the pig. Yeah, the pig. Man, that's the famous one they started with. And, of course, that was amazing, wasn't it? Because then later on we get the same story rolled out about David Cameron apparently putting the pig that's in a pig's mouth.
Yeah, that's what it was going to relate to.
Yeah.
And so that was an opening shot. So you get that. And then, of course, you get it's always the lone wolf with all the fucking information. And he even cut off his own finger to make it look like the kid.
Yeah. He didn't even harm her. Yeah.
Right, and he did all that, and in the end, he just kills himself. So it's like nihilistic down the way as well.
Yeah, but he doesn't want anybody blaming that guy. He wants to make that guy blame free. He wants to make him be the avenging angel who's beyond death. I think that was that's the way I take it more. But I see what you're saying, and all interpretations are on board.
Yeah, but the very fact that it was so mixed in with, and then, you know, like you were saying, you know, we get the whole David Cameron had to do this, or he just did it as part of their little rituals in their. You know, like, and it's just, there was no big.
Yes, there was. He was ridiculed for quite a long time. The joke hung on all the way through until he stepped down, and it's still there. It still pops up every now and then.
Yeah, but no huge process, man. That's what I'm saying. It wasn't like there was nobody storming the parliament to drag him out.
But his wife still takes the piss when he annoys her.
Yeah. And so. Yeah, but the other one of them that I do remember stuck in my mind was the where you know your one had basically the essence of herself, and that was like her servant. Then you had to become the servant. You had to. You already knew everything about the person because you were essentially the person's consciousness or whatever. And but you were being trained to be their like double or do all the work for them kind of thing. Do you remember that one?
No, I haven't. That's actually the those two that we just talked about, I think, are the only two I've seen.
Yeah, well, that's the other one.
That... read about them, maybe, because he's certainly what you call an imagineer, isn't he? He throws out a lot of ideas where he gets them from.
Imagineer or them chancing their arm on what the next scam they're going to try to pull on us all. And
but you've got Charlie Brooker on film showing how, you know, totally, he didn't, what, and then this pig thing happening, and then the Prime Minister, you know, and he's, you can study that if you think he's lying, if you think he knew all about it, and there's some plan.
Yeah. And it would have to be a pig's head, wouldn't it?
I mean, I'd like to have been at the PR kind of talk about that. Now, hi, David, you know, come in, we've got a plan. Now... we're going to sell you this idea, basically. We're going to spread the rumor that when you were in university... Is that okay with you, David? That's all right, isn't it? Because, you see, it's for a higher good and you're serving the country.
Yeah. He's got his trousers leg rolled up and a rope around his neck. Of course, sir. Yes, sir. Three bags full, sir. What size pig head do you take? You know, the royal...
the Charlie Brooker episode you never saw.
Yes, the royal Charlie Brooker fucking charter. Video nasties by, you know, appointment to the Queen. Her Majesty.
I mean, Charlie Brooker's swipes, some of them, did take a good, you know, did do a good job of deconstructing the news and showing you how it's put together, yeah? And showing you, you know, so that you're aware of the... techniques that are used to make something sound plausible, sound realistic, sound and the way you're manipulated, you know, this is evil. He laid it all out there.
Master of it, though, man. He's good. He's good, right? And if there was this other guy that I'm going to say now, right, Chris Morris, I think he took the whole cynical, you know, genre, for want of a better word.
Yeah, really, when he saw the news for what it was before everybody, didn't he?
He got, there's one brilliant sketch that he does. I actually put it in here somewhere in the audio clips of Fakeologist about 9/11. You know the ongoing joke that he used to have every week? There was this reporter, can't think of his name now, but the character, like, and he was always reporting from somewhere. And your man, the anchor, Chris Morris, would always catch him out in a lie. You know, he'd say, "I'm here." Yeah. He'd go, "Well, what do you mean you're there?" And blah, blah, blah. You know, and he'd always, go, "Oh, yeah, well, no, not really. I'm not really here. All right, you know." And the 9/11 one was, he was up in the, you know, the tower having breakfast on the windows of the world. And he hadn't even heard the news about it. And he goes, you know, the anchor goes, "So you haven't seen any planes or anything?" And he goes, what are you talking about? This kind of thing. And then he realizes he's in the the Twin Towers when it's supposed to be about the collapse and whatever. And he catches him out. Like, "You're not really there, are you?" "No, I'm not. Where are you?" "I'm still in the hotel." And "Go over and look out your window," your man said.
That's a very, see what I mean? You can be, that's what I mean, yeah. So ways of getting things through.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, yeah, you have to read in between the lines.
We do, and oh, by the way, I heard that noise there, and...
it looks like Ab's here. Hey, Ab.
How's it going, man? Is it still snowing out your way?
You saw that video?
I saw a video by a dude, all right, but I don't want to bring it up unless you're cool with it.
You saw the video of the snow?
Yeah.
From my other channel.
Yes, and a great, what kind of curvature was on those driving through them? They all seemed to melt as you were driving through them. I imagine a melted thing all the way behind you.
Yeah, that's...
GoPro, is that what it's called?
Oh, that's just a dash cam. Yeah. I don't know, it's just a... Well, you can see the name of the dash cam on the bottom of the screen. Yeah, that was just a blast of snow at the end of the lake there.
Yeah, what do you mean when you say blast? You blast it with hot air or something? What do you do?
No, it's a blast of cold air blasting across the lake, and just it was literally an isolated snowstorm.
Yeah, there are some things to be grateful for.
Yeah, not being in the snowstorm.
Yeah.
I've only got a few minutes. I just saw you guys here. I thought I'd drop in and say hi.
Yeah, how's it been? How are you?
Well, just busy, busy like crazy, working. Busy times. Busy.
Yeah, me too. I'm getting busier.
On all the Christmas backlog.
That's just... I just have a little too many extra jobs to do, so probably overbook myself, but that's what happens sometimes. But I'm trying to pay all those Christmas bills and all the other bills and bills and bills and bills and bills. Just a treadmill.
A treadmill.
Treadmill. But keeping an eye on the blog, just posting a little bit here and there. And
yeah, well, Napoleon got us all... You know, got things started today, Kimberly and Phil, and so there's a...
No, that's good,
That's good, yeah.
Someone has to do it. Someone has to corral people in, so that's good, As long as there's a little fakeology talk, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think so. From what I heard, I was there sometimes and in and out.
I heard you, Maddie, on Hoaxbusters or whatever they call themselves. That was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pity, you know. I hope that you weren't, you took the joke about the chemtrails in good jest. It was much more amusing the first time, and much more kind of came over warmer.
It doesn't. You know. These things don't bother me. They roll off my back. They don't bother me.
Well, that's what we thought. That's why we.
No, it's
that's what it's, but yeah, it's the same thing. Hoaxbusters, nothing going on in Hoaxbusters for ages, and the fart doesn't kind of is not that sort of thing where you can get a bit deeper into a subject or
yes, you know. No, that's true, and not that I would get that deep on my audios if I had regular audios. My audios are pretty surface as well, but. I would like to get them.
Surface is not quite the word. They're more okay, but you don't. It's not so long, and you're a little bit more targeted, yeah. But that was the thing about Hoaxbusters, wasn't it? The rambling talk from Chris and John or whatever. I do like that, and I even like the long pauses sometimes. You know, they seem to fit well if I'm listening and I'm doing something at the same time. Sometimes the pause is just right.
Well, I like them at 1.5 speed, and they're easier to get through.
That's the other thing you can do if you... Yeah, right. That's the other way of doing it. Right.
Yes, but I should probably do some more audios. Just, again, all I would do is just highlight the stuff I'm listening to, and maybe others are interested in that, and or a couple blog posts here and there.
Your 55s and things like that. They were cool.
Yes.
I was going to leave a comment.
Yes, Del?
I was going to leave a comment on the other channel, then you should be listening to some great audio chats from fakeologist.com.
Well, there's no competition in any way. So
you're listening to whatever the mainstream stuff, because I could hear all the commercials coming on. I think it's funny because you know what I currently have going on in my car when I drive, because I have a little thumb drive thing in the car stereo. You can just plug it in.
Okay, right.
It's just loaded up with random, there's fakeologists, there's Hoaxbusters calls, random stuff. And what's going on? Christmas in the audio chats from about 3 years ago.
Oh.
It was yourself, Farce Value, Rollo was there. It was just talking about it, and it was like sort of 3 years ago. But it was in and around Christmas. And I thought it was very strange the way it just randomly came up, on my thumb drive in the car when I'm driving along. So there you go. So.
Interesting. The only reason I wouldn't use the thumb drive to listen to audio is it probably can't keep track of where you were if you come back later.
The one I have does. Like if I turn off the car and just leave it there.
Oh, okay. It resumes where you left off?
Resumes, yeah. It reads so many of it. You see it coming up and it just says reading, and then the next minute it just...
Okay. All right. That's good. I, just so people know, if they want to try it themselves. I use a podcast player called Beyond Pod. I was trying Player FM that Napoleon recommended, but I had to pay for that too. It was fairly expensive, and I thought it was pretty good, but as I got using it, it has so many bugs in it that are very critical to its operation. I was in correspondence with the developer. I said, listen, this thing is too buggy. It can't do a lot of the basic things I need. And it was even giving wrong bookmark audio times when I was trying to tell other people to listen. So I said, you got some fundamental issues. So I use BeyondPod, an old version, because the new version's ruined as well because someone else bought the company. So I use an old version of it, and I force my phone not to update. But one of the good things about that program, BeyondPod for the Android, is you can create a virtual directory or virtual feed in it. So you can put all your downloaded audios that aren't in a proper podcast feed into BeyondPod. So that way you can keep track of all the various audios you're listening to, just as if they were in a regular feed. Yeah. And I value that because, of course, I'm listening to all the old This American Life. And otherwise I would have a hell of a time trying to keep track of what I listened to and where I was.
One of the other ones that I can fast forward as well and rewind, you know, but it's one of those things where, you know, if your finger just goes off it for a second, it just jumps to the next.
Yes, I know, it's so annoying.
I don't like that, right? So hence, I sat through yourself and what do you call him? O'Halligan. Right?
O'Halloran,
right? Going through the whole getting rid of Windows and replacing it with
Linux.
So, like, that was, you know, you got a long podcast out there on that, which is quite informative, actually. You know, you listen to it a second time and, you know, some more.
Well, good for you. Good on you.
O'Halligan.
Well, we try to inform. We try not to be so... What was I going to play? I was going to play some 9/11 clip from one of the main American Life.
Did you see your 9/11 that I posted earlier on, man? Did you see that?
Where was that?
I put it in the live stream chat. Jenny is during 9/11.
Oh, I see that. Okay, let's listen to this. Let me look.
Yeah, it's pretty...
Or, as these planes ended up where they ended up.
Thanks very much, Lisa Stark, who has... a very clear picture many times a day on what precisely happened. There was at least as much as we know of what happened. Thank you. On board those planes, we do not very often make recommendations for people's behavior from this chair, but as Lisa was talking, I checked in with my children, and it who were deeply stressed, as I think young people are across the United States. And so if you're a parent, you got a kid in some other part of the country, call them up. Exchange observations. People have been getting onto sites on the web, which is a very good.
Okay.
So I didn't. There's a big country star does that trick, doesn't he? He stops the concert in the middle of the and he says, "Well, I've got to phone my wife and child, you know, because it's time to go to bed." And, you know, it's very, very, very effective and down on the emotional level.
Concerts where they would incorporate into their songs huge monoliths with all the names of the victims of 9/11. You know, they're out there. I posted them as well at various times over the years. And here
I posted that on fakeologist.com. I like some of those little guys, so I appreciate that. They get lost on... the Discord. So, yeah, anything like that, I should try and archive, which I will do. I'll put that on FakeTube, too, just for fun. But what was I going to play? I'll try and find this audio I was listening to. Maybe it was this thing.
You know what his dead struggle is? I think a lot of people, especially if you're younger, you read him in school. His books, Division Street and Working and The Good War. He was an oral historian. But from 1952 to 1997, he also did a radio show on WFMT in Chicago, where he would broadcast the interviews that ended up in his books, and also lots of interviews with famous musicians and actors and artists. Anyway, I was going through some old tapes of his radio show recently for this event they had celebrating his life, and I stumbled across this utterly ordinary, nothing special going on Friday on his radio program. Anyway, here's Studs.
I think it's pretty obvious to readers that Mike Rothko's columns not only are...
Sorry, that's the wrong one. I can't remember now. I should have written it down. I listened to too many, and then I got... There was a good 9/11 funny reference. So that's not it. Sorry about that.
Yeah, they do stick in the references, don't they? The 9/11 references.
Yes. That's not the one. I should have written it down. Oh, well. That's what happens.
There's a few people here, and they're muted. Phil, an original simulant. Are you there, lads? You want to say anything? Matty, are you still there?
I'm still here, yeah. I was still thinking about the differences between those sort of three sites. The site's quite good, really, because then you've got, you know, the Fart, which is kind of mayhem and madcap and films and a little bit of Fakeology.
A little bit of Fakeology.
Yeah. And then you've got the Fakeologist, which is much, you know, okay, this is more Fakeology, yeah. And then you've got Hoaxbusters, where people can go into philosophy and generalize and esoteric stuff if they want as well, yeah? Mm-hmm. And where things, you know, come from and originate and the deepest aspect of it, yeah? So everything's catered for, I think that's really good spread. And there's a lot of crossover between the people, seems to me.
Oh, yeah. As long as there's some Fakeology, I don't mind listening.
Yeah, I mean, you appear on, you know, on all sides.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got a nice kind of, okay, those have got their rails, and we know, you know what you do when you go on that side, or what you
can do. And you're coming on strong. You're on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I am at the moment. But it's also because, a bit like Napoleon, nothing's happening, so we've got to make do something. Because, yeah, I like enjoying to, someone's put something up in the chat, great, I'll listen to it. If no one's putting anything up in the chat, then in the end, well, we're going to have to do it ourselves. Oh. So, well, if we're chatting and we're live, what's it?
Yeah, sorry, I'm trying to find this thing now. I don't know what it was I was listening to. It's a little harder to find. I just wanted to play it for you before I got to go for dinner in a minute.
Really. Yeah, that would be cool. Find it. What else have we got going on?
Well, there's certain things about the Irish harp, man, which totally transcends and predates anything Masonic, for starters. And apart from it being, you know, a musical instrument, comprehensive musical instrument, because, you know, a piano is basically a harp lying on its side with hammers hitting the strings. It's also, you know, when you want to have a plumb line, you hang it out the bottom of it, you use two of them, and the strings form a grid. You can do any kind of architectural drawings and everything else within it. It's also one of those sextants. You know, you can line it up, you know, to navigate by the stars. And there are only the few that I can think off the top of my head. There's so many other ones, but I just wanted to put that on the record.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
All I had to do is do a Google search. I should have done that. Originally, here you go. Listen to this, guys.
In October 2003, a guy was brought into the psychiatric emergency room at Bellevue Hospital in New York City. Dr. Joe Gold was the chief attending psychiatrist that day and saw him.
He felt that his life was essentially a reality show, that he's been recorded for years, that everyone in his life was an actor reading from a script. And he came to New York essentially to test this hypothesis.
He thought that maybe 9/11 was faked, just to get a reaction out of him on reality TV.
And if he came to New York, and if the World Trade Centers were still standing, he would know that that was in fact the case. If in fact they had been destroyed, then he would admit that perhaps he was delusional.
But once he got to New York, instead of visiting the Twin Towers, he walked into the United Nations and asked for asylum. Asylum from a TV show that was filming him without his consent, 24 hours a day, which, you know, is how he ended up in Bellevue. Dr. Gold didn't think much of this. People show up at Bellevue with lots of weird delusions all the time. And then a few months later, another guy walks in with the same idea, that he was being filmed 24/7 and broadcast around the world. And the second guy, like the first one, mentioned a film, the 1998 movie The Truman Show.
Both of them named The Truman Show, you know, by name. They said, my life is like The Truman Show.
Truman is played by Jim Carrey. He's filmed all day, every day, on a program that is broadcast to billions of people around the globe. His wife, his best friend, everybody around him is an actor. Everybody knows it's a TV show but him, until one day he starts to see clues that make him suspicious. And just to be clear, you're not saying that The Truman Show necessarily triggered this. Like, people watch The Truman Show and suddenly something in their brain snaps.
Yeah, exactly. On the contrary, I think it's just when people are becoming psychotic, things feel a little bit unusual, a bit odd, but what would explain all this weirdness? And perhaps if you've seen the movie and that's kicking around your head, you might say, yes, this is it. This is what's happening to me.
If your psychosis includes both paranoia and a sense that you are very, very important, what psychiatrists call grandiosity, 30 years ago, you know, you might think that the CIA or the KGB is watching you all the time. These days, you have another possible explanation, reality TV. A few months later, a third patient showed up with the same delusion, and a few months after that, a fourth. Dr. Gold started calling it the Truman Show delusion. He's just written a book about it with his brother Ian called Suspicious Minds. In one case in the book, a patient, a super smart guy, an academic, very altruistic, believed that he was part of an elaborate game show, and the world was watching him and betting on everything that he did.
And this was a really fun thing that everyone would be doing online, and the monies collected would go to charities all over the world, and that every single human being on Earth would be given some amount of money, and the world would be, you know, bettered for it.
One of the things that he included in his delusion, you write in your book, is that he has the thought that he actually was the mastermind who created this game show that he was on, and that he controlled it, and he knew the rules when he had originally created the show, but some and all the rules, which is so interesting because, of course, it's true. Like, he did invent the game show, and the only fact that he's missing is that it's not real. It's all in his own head.
That's an interesting way of putting it. It is kind of fantastical.
And heartbreaking.
It is.
Like, part of him knows he
Absolutely.
Made it up, but he can't grasp the whole reality.
He does not remember. At one point, he suggests that he told his best friends, this is what I'm going to do. You're going to run the show, but you will now hypnotize me. And I will forget.
All right, that's about it. I just wanted to play that because of the 9/11 reference. And they're just trying to equate psychosis with the 9/11 being a simulation.
Yeah,
and they appeal to ridicule, saying, oh, he wanted to go to New York to see if the towers were actually gone. And they brought up the Truman Show, which a lot of truthers and we like to talk about a lot because there's a lot to the idea that there are LARPers in and around us acting out certain hoaxes. And I believe there are LARPers, and those are lifetime actors. Like the Bob McElwains of 9/11, and just recently, Elizabeth Smart. Does anyone remember Elizabeth Smart from 1998?
Elucidate, please.
She was the girl that was kidnapped from her house in Salt Lake City and was missing for 9 months. And she was the story was a top story on CNN, which is the CIA news network or reality television news network. It occupied the top story for 9 months, where they interviewed all the players around it. And I think it was just another one of those. And she was recovered 9 months later, alive.
9 months later, so a birth.
Yep. 9 months later, she was recovered alive. She was living in Salt Lake City, not far off on the street, allegedly. spirited away into the woods near her house. I don't know. I can't remember the whole story anymore, but it was a huge crime story, which I think was totally fabricated, like OJ.
And she was delighted she didn't have to do the balloon boy scenario.
What's that?
She was happy that she didn't have to do the balloon boy scenario, learn all those lines. Remember the balloon boy?
Oh, vaguely. But do you remember the Elizabeth Smart thing?
No.
You didn't know that one, huh? That was huge.
It reminded me of the balloon boy, you know?
Well, she wrote a book called My Story, and just recently the movie came out. It took quite a while, but I'm going to see if it's on YouTube. I only have one post on my blog about it, and that was 6 years ago when the book came out. But if you look up Elizabeth Smart documentary...
I think that sounds like your American one. I think in Europe we had, in Britain they had Madeleine McCann, didn't they? Was there?
Yes. Well, here it is here. It's on YouTube. They want it out there. It's got 500,000 views.
Okay. This is the film about
it. Yeah, I'm going to link to it. I'll link to it in the live stream show notes. You might want to watch it, but I'm quite sure. The reason I brought it up again is she is a LARPer, a live-action role player. It's the She's a lifetime actor promoting this fear story.
Isn't it? Well, which one of the psychologists is it that coined the law, inverted commas, that definitely...
Yes, I think Zell, maybe. He calls it a rule, but it's something we've said. There's the book, then there's the movie.
A good rule of thumb, at least, yeah.
Well, this movie took a long time. Anyway, you guys can chew on that. I gotta go eat my dinner. I'll be back if you guys are still here.
All right, take care, Ab.
Take care, Ab. Maddie.
None of this
stuff
is without the so-called docudrama, documentary. They're all just extensions of the same stuff.
They're just story.
You know, LARPers, a few weeks in without having to actually do interactions. They just do their script and film it for a camera.
Yeah. Well, that's something to sell.
Well, then you can link that with these off-the-cuff, made-up each year psychiatric disorder names, you know? Don't forget, all that stuff only started being developed with, just at the same time as the Titanic scam, you know, and the Central...
Bedlam.
Scam. Bedlam, yeah.
Bedlam.
Another cyclical production, multifaceted production, we'll call it, from all angles. And what's the common denominator between them all? It's the media. It's basically what we're even partaking in here on the internet. What's the internet? Another medium.
That's right, yeah.
So.
Yeah, but we're not broadcasting to thousands or millions. We have no influence, except in a minuscule way. I don't think we have any, because anyone here has got their own mind, I hope.
Yeah, that's missing the point. That's like, I don't know if... it's just people getting together, and in this section here, we're all on the same page on certain, aspects. But that's not the full, you go out there and you see the same thing in various different genres, but it's all the same collective idea. People figuring out that the shit is wrong, and there's a lot of bullshit around them. And then the internet here is there for the likes of us, and we find... like-minded people, and we also find holding pens and directional, gatekeepers.
Yes, it's interesting that...
The overall map of the place, which is basically, a virtual second life thing of reality,
I mean, we should start looking... Well, maybe we should start looking for what is real.
Yeah, well, reality for people who have an internet connection, you see, there's a cutoff point already. And how many people, I remember seeing one of these statistics, and there's lies, damn lies, and then there's statistics. There was some sort of poll where at the time, it was like 85% of the world population had never made a phone call, never mind had a phone or anything like that. Do you remember that kind of propaganda?
Or what year was that?
It was just like one of these fun facts, you know, like in this world of, you know, people with mobile phones and internet connection, you know, 90% of the world hadn't made a phone call yet, you know, kind of thing.
Really? I thought it was the other way around. I thought everyone had mobile phones now, even the Africans. And
I don't know. You could kind of Google it, you know. But that's seriously.
Bad. I've offended there. But yeah.
That was a meme. That's what I'm trying to say. That was a meme at the time before memes were invented.
Yeah.
But one of them was like a high percentage. I plucked 90% out. But like, you know yourself, there's another one that, you know, 90% of all, you know, statistics are plucked out of the air.
Yeah.
You know, or made up at the time.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of get connected really quick now because it's so much easier to set up a mobile phone system than it was to set up an old-fashioned telephone system. Bury all the cables underground and overground. And
you can bury cables in the ground. Like, if you look up, there's maps of all the cables going across the Atlantic.
Yeah.
From so-called 1800s onwards. And what we're told are satellites today are more than likely just, you know, blimps, dirigibles. You know, the things that they got rid of back then as well with the scare tactic of the Hindenburg blowing up, hydrogen everywhere. I'm sure there's plenty of helium pumped up there relaying electrical signals. And there's your satellites, you know, that kind of alternative thinking.
Yeah, there's lots of alternatives, lots of speculation again in the end, but yeah, there's some good thinking behind that. How it could be done without satellites. There's lots of people talking about the various alternatives. Gaia was talking about that last week on Hoaxbusters.
It's all about communication. Well, I've only gotten as far as 2 hours and 28 minutes, nearly 2:30.
Yeah, it's a long one.
Hoaxbusters call. And a lot of it was Gaia. But, I'll listen to the rest of it. That'll be another day's
labor. Labor? You don't care. You've got to have it on while you're doing something else, haven't you?
Exactly. That's what I meant, you know, but jokingly, you know.
We've got quite a lot of truck drivers and people who drive for a living because they can listen to all these podcasts. It's great job to do if you're into podcasts and stuff, yeah?
Any kind of thing that you're already good at and you can do, you can have in the background and take in what people are talking about whilst doing your own thing. And there's a lot of, you know, it's not just driving jobs. There's people that, you know, you can paint, you know, you could be painting a wall while listening to this kind of discourse.
Doing your chores. Yeah.
There's certain things you can't be doing. Like, you couldn't be, like, singing a new song and trying to, you know, develop a song or something like that.
No, or adding up numbers.
In the background, freaking out about looking up at the sky and all that. But, I'm only joking, Gaia. He's all right. But there's a lot of stuff you can be doing. You know? Digging the garden. You know, I've listened to many a podcast when I'd be out getting my garden ready for planting and stuff. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We're just getting over the hump now, Christmas and all that, and spring is starting to appear already, even though we're only in the middle of January.
Oh, what have you got? Snowdrops coming
in? You know, the evenings are getting brighter again. The garden
is,
like, come and do something with me.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, Del, but shall we move to another room? Because I don't know whether I've got anything interesting enough for a podcast.
That's a good out. But I was just about to ask you, man, did you do any gigs towards, you know, since I was talking to you last? Was there any musical things that you attended?
No. I've got one coming on Saturday. It's a nice one as well because I'm opening it with me and my wife. Doing my songs, and then they're all friends. The two bands afterwards, but I know them all. And the band on at the end, I was a founding member of that band, yeah. So And then because they have all named Narek, and so and the guy doing the gig asked the band to ask me if I would do a song or two with them, you know. So I'm doing three songs with them as well. So it'll be nice, you know. It'd be nice. And the song works good. It's good. The three songs I'm doing, I thought, fucking hell, these are good songs. You're okay. So it's nice, yeah. So that's what's coming up. So I'm, you know. Yeah,
you'll probably record it and you'll probably record it eventually or eventually put it up on one of your YouTube.
I don't know. If someone, I don't do that. Sometimes other people do. I don't do it myself. But maybe, I think someone will put that up because of the other band as well, especially Heavy Gummy.
Well, let us know if anyone comes up. You know, they'd be looking forward to watching that, man, listening to it.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah, okay.
All right, so we want to fake off. I'm going over to the pub for a while myself anyway. So
okay, I'll meet you in the bar, in the snug.
All right, well, take care then, man.
Yeah, you too. Take care, everybody, and I'll see you in the snug.
Yeah. Good night, fakeologist. Enjoy your dinner. And Phil, you know, if you're still there, you're more than welcome in the snug as well. So I'll say good night as well and hop off.
Hi, this is Dave J. from California. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.